Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 28, 2019. Boy, is time flying, huh? We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email us a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up from where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Mark. All right, this is the Gospel of Mark, chapter 6, verses 14 through 29. And King Herod heard of him, that is Jesus Christ, for his name was spread abroad, and he said that John the Baptist was risen from the dead, and therefore mighty works do show forth themselves in him. Others said that it is Elijah, and others said that it is a prophet or one of the prophets. But when Herod heard thereof, he said, "It is John whom I beheaded. He is risen from the dead." For Herod himself had sent forth and laid hold upon John, and bound him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife, for he had married her. For John had said unto Herod, "It is not lawful for thee to have thy brother's wife." Therefore Herodias had a quarrel against him, and would have killed him, but she could not. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a just man and a holy, and observed him, and when he heard him, he did many things, and heard him gladly. And when a convenient day was come, that Herod on his birthday made a supper to his lords, high captains, and chief estates of Galilee, and when the daughter of the said Herodias came in, and danced, and pleased Herod, and them that sat with him, the king said unto the damsel, "Ask of me whatsoever thou wilt, and I will give it thee." And he swore unto her that whatsoever thou shalt ask of me, I will give it to thee unto the half of my kingdom. And she went forth and said unto her mother, "What shall I ask?" And she said, "The head of John the Baptist." And she came in straightway with haste unto the king and asked, saying, "I will that thou give me by and by in a charger the head of John the Baptist." And the king was exceedingly sorry, yet for his oath's sake, and for their sakes which sat with him, he would not reject her. And immediately the king sent an executioner, and commanded his head to be brought, and he went and beheaded him in the prison, and brought his head in a charger, and gave it to the damsel, and the damsel gave it to her mother. And when his disciples heard it, they came and took up his corpse and laid it in a tomb. The Gospel of Mark, that was chapter 6, verses 14 through 29. Okay, tonight we're going to take a look at NLA's plan in a nutshell. By the way, how am I coming through? Am I coming in too loud or anything?
Sounds a little bit hot to me, John, but...
A little high?
Readable. Yeah, a little bit hot.
Okay. Let me see if I could fix that before we go forward. Okay. Let's see how this sounds. I'm going to lower my mic a bit.
Let's try right there.
How's that? Is that any better? Testing 1, 2...
That's better. If you just move back away from the mic, that's great.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, let's try that. Is this good? All right?
That sounds good to me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so tonight we're going to, like I said, we're going to cover NLA's plan in a nutshell. And anybody that would like to follow along with this, I did put a copy of this up on our front page. So go to nationallibertyalliance.org. It's close to the top. It's right above the Dear President Trump video. And it says NLA's plan in a nutshell. It's a PDF. I did make a YouTube. I'm going to get it up this week. And with that YouTube, it'll be pretty much what we're going to be speaking about tonight and what you will be reading if you want to read along with this tonight, NLA's plan in a nutshell. So again, it's just a little bit down off the top right above the video, Dear President Trump. We're going to be preparing for running for committeemen. And that starts in January from some states. We're going to talk about that tonight and get into the details. And again, we're going to be pumping on this every month. We'll probably make some kind of an announcement every Monday night. But we're going to take one Monday a month, and we're going to focus in on specifically the committeeman. We'll also do a PowerPoint video on how to fill out the paperwork. And anybody who would like to become a committeeman, you can go up to our website. We don't have this page up yet. It's being still worked on, and we're hoping to get it done before the end of this week. But it'll be under grand jury, and as you come down on the blue line, highlight grand jury, come down to, it'll be probably down on the bottom right next to become a grand jury administrator. And anybody who would like to become a grand jury administrator, if you haven't done so yet, you can click on this button here, and you know, the instructions will be how to sign up for a grand jury administrator. Now, both of these positions require knowledge of the Constitution, and our government by consent course will be covering that. Now, I know. I don't remember how many chapters we have up, but I can see that some people have already reached the end of the course as far as they can go. I just haven't been able to get back yet to finish up the chapters. And I've mentioned this before. Most of this course is already written up, but the section that has to go next, which is really focusing in on details of the Constitution itself, that I have to finish up on. I got a lot of that done. It's just a matter of getting in there, completing it, and getting it perfected the best I can, and then posting it up. And I'm hoping to have it done soon. But we constantly are coming into a lot of different things going on. We got a lot of paper writing going on. And there's just a lot of things going on. But again, I will endeavor to get back to that. Maybe even this week I'm going to try to put some time aside and get some more up. But anyway, anybody who's going to become a committeeman, and this is where we fail. You know, committees of safety, we've spoke about that many, many times in the past, but the committees of safety is a process that our founding fathers used in order to create this nation of ours. They formed together in sort of a loose government through a committee of safety, and so all of the different towns and villages throughout had committees of safety, and they were gathering together in order to create the United States of America, become states and unify. And the committees of safety, after that had happened, morphed into the committeeman to maintain control of that political process. And this is extremely important to understand, because if we the people had control of that political process, there'd be no need for politics. Period. The political process is one thing, but the politicking, you know, the selling of their souls, really, taking all that funny money from special interest groups, and they get elected to represent us, and they go to Washington, they're offered all this money, and they represent the will of the special interest groups and the party above we the people's will. And how government should run. We've already given them strict instructions on what authority and jurisdictions they have and what we expect of them. And that's written up in what we call the Constitution for the United States of America. We also, of course, gave them our Bill of Rights. Anything you do, don't violate these 10 Bill of Rights. And, of course, we have more than that. But these are 10 basic foundational rights. And they are to read and understand our Constitution in light of that Bill of Rights. Anything that is repugnant to any one of our Bill of Rights, any one of our unnatural, unalienable rights, anything that violates it in any way in their actions is null and void. It is no more. It cannot be part. But anyway, the way our Constitution was actually written up, the way our courts were meant to operate, and the way the political process was meant to go, would bring us into a nation truly controlled by we the people, where we do indeed have government by consent. But it's up to the people to step up and take these positions and take control of their government through this process. Become an elected committee man in your county and in your town, in your election district. Anyway, one of the main jobs or the purpose of the committee man ultimately is to put people on the ballot. Okay. Today, right now, the elite put people on our ballots. You have the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. But this is the job of the people that they stole from us. And we've allowed them to steal from us by being ignorant and not being interested in learning. And if we're going to take our nation back, then we need to learn. And our requirements as a committeeman should be very singular and focused. We want them to take it serious, that they're going to take their oath and take that oath serious, and that they understand the Constitution, that they understand the extent of their power and their authority and their jurisdiction. But how can we know if they understand that if we don't understand that? And therein is our course. And anybody that wants to get sign up as a committeeman and work with us, we require that they take the government by consent course. This way they have a good understanding and an idea of how our political process is, what is our heritage, what is our history, how do our courts work, what is law, what is equity, the meaning of many of the phrases and lines in the Constitution, and the arguments and debates that took place to bring that together. And again, I'll say this again, if we take control of the committeeman process and the administration for the juries, but as far as politics is going, we take control of the political process, there will be no more politicians. There'll be people who are statesmen representing us. And if they're not statesmen and they're not representing the people, and they are trying to, well, again, if they take funny money, as far as I'm concerned, when they come back to the state they're representing, we should arrest them. But we need to shut that down, that whole process where all these special interest groups come and offer all this money in order to get their will done. And certainly the people's will is not being done. So anyway, this is an introduction tonight to NLA's plan in a nutshell. And again, we will be putting a video up on the front page right where the copy of the PDF is at, and we also will be, I mentioned this, doing a PowerPoint video, which will give very specific instructions on how to fill out, in some basic details, how to fill out the petition to become a committeeman. And by the way, it's very simple to become a committeeman. You're a committeeman in your own election district, so it's maybe a block down this way and a block down that way. Where the people that you would represent, live. And generally, there is never more than 400 people within an election district. And it could be as small as far as, whatever your party might be, Republican or Democrat. You may have to get 5 signatures, or you may have to get the most you'd need is 20 signatures. And usually that's like down in the city where there's a lot of people pulled together in all of these different election districts. But generally, in most places, I know of one place, one person shared with me, that him and his wife were the only two Republicans in their election district that was registered to vote as Republicans. And so they all they had to do was vote for themselves. They became the committee man for their election district. So again, it's very simple. It's only a matter of taking a petition, filling the petition out properly, and walking your election district, which is right down the block from where you live, your neighbors next door, and getting their signature. I know for me, when I ran for committee man, I only needed 7 signatures. I went out and got 10, and that's all I needed. It's 5% of the people in your election district. So that's all that you need is 5%. So for 400, that's 4 times 5, it's 20 signatures. So you get 22. But again, most people will be needing maybe about 10, 12, 8, somewhere in there. Okay, but we'll get into more of those details as the months go by. But pay very close attention to where it is in time-wise that you need to run for this committeeman. You need to be in different states. I think there are 4 states. We're going to cover this a little tonight. But I think there are 4 states that do this in January. So those people who live in those states, they need to be paying attention now. And then in February, there's X amount of states, in March and April, May, June. I believe New York, where I live, I think it's April is when we do our walking. And once you walk your papers, you file them in the Board of Election. And then if there's no opposition to you, they don't put you on the ballot. You're just deemed elected. I know New York State Constitution makes that clear, that the committee man, if he's not has no opposition, no competition against him or her, then they are just deemed elected. Your election took place. But the committee man is the only one that is elected at the primary election. It's very important to understand. Okay? So anybody who votes for a committee man because there's a runoff, it's only in that election district for those people. And whoever gets the most votes obviously wins at that point. It is rare that you'll find yourself in a situation where you're running against someone, especially right now. Nobody's running for committeemen. All the committeemen that exist today, they've been appointed. They're not elected. None of them. Even the people who are appointing them aren't even elected. It's a private party. And that's the other good news. See, the private party is controlled by a private organization. And it's called the Republican Party, and it is a corporation. Believe me, it's an association. And then there's the Democratic Party, and again, it's a corporation, it's an association, and they have agendas, and they put all the stuff out that we see that just confuses the hell out of us. And they've created that line, where it's on the left is the Democrats or the liberals, and on the right are the conservatives or whatever. And it's that struggle back and forth, okay? But that's not true, and we're going to talk a little bit about that too tonight, so I'm not going to get too much into that. But, they have convinced us of these things. Once you take back the committeeman process in your state, we don't need a lot of people to do this. We only need 5 people per county. That's the desired thing. More than that, of course, but 5 in per county would be desired. But all we really need to take back an entire state is 5 people. 5 people that run properly, become the elected committeeman. Actually, you could do it at 1, but you really need a committee, so you want to get 5 people. So 5 people can take back a state. That means you get to appoint all of the people that are in your election districts, people that think that they're committeemen, think that they ran and were elected. They're actually appointed. But you can reveal the truth to them. And you can reappoint all the people, that's in the election district, with the exception of those who are totally out of control and have been really raking dollars up on their positions and working for the enemy, so to speak. Those people we can dismiss. But the general committeeman, they think that they're elected. They think their vote is counting. They think a lot of things, and they really want to do something, but they too don't know or understand the process, nor do they know the Constitution. But any of these people who are willing to learn the Constitution, we will assist them to become elected the next time around so that we can really have true grassroots. For an example of how many committeemen, there are 249 committeemen in my county. My county has 249 election districts, and therefore there's one committeeman for each election district. So, we can take back the entire nation this year, politically wise. And once we take back the Republican Party, or even the Democratic Party, we shut those private associations down, period. It's in the law. This name belongs to the people, okay, the two-party system that we are in. And the party should be the people on the grassroots level actually deciding the things necessary, making the decisions to get the right people onto the ballot to make sure that the votes are counted and that we have good elections. So, it's all about really just taking back what we have lost. So it's very simple to become. It requires about 40 hours a year, and I don't even think it'll take that many hours. Certain years are slower than others, meaning being that sometimes you're just voting for town people, you know, people in your village. If you have a mayor, you're voting for a mayor or councilors or whatever, and even a dog catcher, you know. Those particular times for those elections, it's pretty slow as far as the necessary business of the committeemen. But even with running during the even years or every 4 years when the presidential election takes place, basically you come together a couple of nights, a night a week over the course of maybe a month, and you come together for 2 hours or whatever, 3 hours at most, I'd imagine, and you'd be interviewing these people that want to run for office. I mean, isn't that our job? Isn't that what we should be doing? And it's only during the election district time. And then that you be at the election, that the polling, when they're counting the votes. I mean, you could be there all day of being an observer. We do have paid observers and then totally neutral people, and they're paid. I think it's $300 or $400 for the day. They're paid for that. But the committeemen, they can be there and also be a watcher, a poll watcher. But it's not required to be there all day for that purpose. But what is required on the election day, and we're talking about particularly, and we're talking both the election and the primaries, but we're talking particularly the primaries right now, that the committeeman is there when the time of the vote counts. So if your election district closes down at 9 o'clock, you should be there at 8:45. Or whatever, and then the voting, the counting of the votes should be done in public. That's the way it used to be, and it doesn't matter how technical we've become, we need to get back to that, counting votes in the public. So anyway, there's a whole process for all that, and all that is laid out, and we will do a handbook on this also for committeemen. But there's not much to it. Again, you get to interview these people, and the good part, the really good part, is if you send the wrong person in and you decide you got to get rid of this guy, you can recall them. And you can recall someone within 90 days and have another election up to replace them. That's the good news. That's government by consent. That's control. That's fear of the people. And as a matter of fact, the committeemen of today, anybody running for office, these people running for office kiss the feet of the committeeman. If they get a call from the one of maybe the county or even the town, but the county chairman or something, or anybody really, any of the committeemen, they get a call and say, hey, we'd like to talk with you. We'll see you Tuesday at 8 o'clock. They're going to be there because they won't get onto the ballot unless the committeeman put them there. That's the important part of this whole thing. Right now, again, the people don't control that. And it's all the criminals that are put onto the ballot. We got a problem, and only we can fix it. Okay, so let's get through and get going with this, get through this paper. NLA's plan in a nutshell. If you want to follow, NationalLibertyAlliance.org front page, just a little bit down, right above the video, Dear President Trump. We the people have forgotten the science of government by consent. The mission and purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to provide an online national venue where the people can organize, communicate, and learn the science of government by consent. As the swamp is drained and power removed from the deep state, a vacuum will occur. And if we the people do not educate ourselves and fill these positions of power, our servants will. And it will be only a matter of time before we find ourselves back under tyranny again. In the Supreme Court case of the United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administrated to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. Thus, the people have the unbridled right to impanel their own grand jury and present true bills of indictment to a court, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding. Our founding fathers, with foresight, thereby created a buffer the people may rely upon for justice when public officials, including judges, criminally violate the law. In order for the people to have government by consent, they need to learn the science of government by consent. This knowledge controls our destiny as a people, without which we will be controlled by tyrants. It is the duty of every man, woman, and child to have this knowledge so that they can exercise their liberty and bind our government servants with the chains of the Constitution. And since Congress lacks the backbone to impeach, we the people, via indictments or recall, can remove them from office. Once we bring law and order back into our courts, we can then use the courts to restore our corrupt political process. The Magna Carta was executed by 25 people. The Declaration of Independence was executed by 56 people. The Constitution was executed by 40 people. And on August 14, 2019, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, executed by more than 8,000 people, filed and served upon the U.S. Supreme Court and both houses a declaration of restoration of the law of the land and a demand for the resignation of those who are of a mind to resist or suffer indictment for fraud on the court, conspiracy, felonies, and or treason. We the people, via the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, also known as the Sureties of the Peace, hereinafter the people, are an assembly of more than 8,000 sovereign people from every state, being both the tribunal at this extraordinary action and the authors of the law under the authority of natural law by right of the covenants of 1776, 1789, and 1791. With our Creator under His natural law at large. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants. Preamble, Declaration of Independence. The people have an indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it is found adverse or inadequate to the purposes of its institution. James Madison. Only the people can save the Republic. National Liberty Alliance provides the only peaceful and lawful solution to save our Republic, and it will require a grassroots commitment of about 15,000 people to take it back. We in America do not have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. Thomas Jefferson. Both the Republican and the Democratic associations, which are private corporations, and the American Bar Association, which is also a private corporation, have been covertly nibbling away at our founding documents since 1776. With President Trump and the Patriots working from the top down to defeat the deep state, the people at the grassroots must bring the bottom up. Draining the swamp and removing the deep state will create a power vacuum in our courts and our political process that must be filled by we the people in order to bring back a government by consent. If the people fail to take back their rightful heritage of rule, self-rule, by controlling our courts of law via free and independent juries, and our political process via elected committeemen, we will lose our republic and remain a democracy, which is mob rule. The mob being an out-of-control, lawless, bureaucratic tyrants. Thomas Jefferson said, "The two enemies of the people are criminals and government." So let us tie down the second with the chains of the Constitution, so the second will not become the legalized version of the first. Presently, the deep state still has a stronghold of the two power structures that control the political and judicial narrative. And until the people tie it down with the chains of the Constitution, America will continue to be under mob rule. A prerequisite by the people who will take up the 15,000 positions to take back our republic is a proper education. NLA is presently providing that education in two courses, the civics course and the government by consent course, and our weekly discourses, updates, and open forums. NLA will also provide the following pocket handbooks: Jurist Administrator's Handbook, Jurist Pocket Handbook, Committeeman Pocket Handbook, and the Sheriff's Pocket Handbook to empower the people. Only through a proper education in common law and its history can the people realize that we the people have been providentially entrusted via natural law to dispense justice and were provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary and our representatives. The common law grand jury, being the sureties of the peace, having the unbridled right by law and in law to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of information, indictments, and presentments to a court of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding under natural law. The tyrant federal judges already understand this and fear the people, finding out as we nail it to their doors. And as Israel marched around the walls of Jericho and shouted on the seventh day, the walls fell, and Israel took the city. So are we the people, with the continuous filing of papers that shout the truth of their sedition, will continue until the deep state collapses, being their proverbial wall, and the people will rush in to reclaim their courts of justice by God's will. As Mahatma Gandhi said and demonstrated, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Presently, the federal judiciary is maintaining the status quo. These traitorous judges prevent all cases against government agents and major corporations from being heard by shutting them down, covering up the few that get through, and silencing those who bring them. These judges get away with their acts of terror against all who dare to challenge the status quo, because they are protected by a network of criminals in high places, herein the proverbial wall within our federal agencies, including the United States Supreme Court, both houses of Congress, and pre-2017 executive administrations. In opposition to the federal judiciary's subversive act, the common law grand jury is already organized in filing papers revealing its tyranny. The common law grand jury is comprised of 50 grand juries, each unified amongst the counties within their respective states. All 50 states have unified nationally as an assembly of thousands of people in the name of we the people to suppress, through our courts of justice, subverts, both foreign and domestic, acting under the color of law within our governments. Each state was unified by National Liberty Alliance's members visiting 3,133 counties. To present to the people our intent to reinstate natural law and reconstitute the common law grand and petit juries. The people's response across the nation was overwhelming. The unified United States common law grand jury will remain in session until the threat of subversion by enemies both foreign and domestic within our government is routed out and the people take back their courts in every county at the grassroots. NLA's plan. Grand and petit jury administrators. We will need 4 jury administrators and 1 paralegal secretary in each county for a total of 15,700 people working in the state courts to take back and prevent jury tampering and stacking. These administrators are to be separate from the judiciary, taking both an oath to defend and support the Constitution and a vow to nature's God to proceed under natural law with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. Resistance is expected at every level, but once we succeed in the federal courts, we will take the initiative and jointly sue every state Supreme Court and federal court of record for access to the courts and control of the jury process by right. Administrators will be operating in the state courts within their respective counties. In workspaces already aggregated for such business, the monies to pay salaries and overhead costs are already appropriated by the county comptroller to the courts and will just need to be redirected to a new and rightful jury administrators. Considering that the penal code under Title 18 does not apply to the people under common law, the opening of federal criminal courts should be significantly less than they are today. Nevertheless, when a grand jury is needed in a federal court, the federal prosecutor can seek their indictment from grand juries already operating in the appropriate county. If an indictment is granted, the administrators of the county will assemble a petit jury from the appropriate jurisdiction and orientate them for trial in the said federal court. Jury administrators will be responsible for the orientating of both the petit and grand juries. They will be responsible for seeing that the juries are not tainted or abused by the officers of the court. They will be the doorkeepers of the grand jury, assuring that the people have access. They will act as an investigative body for the grand jury and deliver their findings directly to the grand jury. They will answer the jury's questions and assist in the writing of grand jury decisions. If the answers are unknown, the administrators will have direct access to NLA's legal counsel for assistance in the research for the answers. They will assist the people by arbitrating their complaints against bureaucrats and their peers, and if it cannot be settled, they will provide for the accuser's access to address the grand jury, where the assistant administrator may produce their findings to the grand jury also. The grand jury, being the sureties of the peace, may choose to arbitrate a solution if both parties are willing, or indict for the petit jury to decide. If an administrator breaks their oath or vow, the remaining 3 administrators will judge the violator and endeavor to restore them. If they cannot restore the violator, they will dismiss them and seek a replacement. The dismissed administrator may seek an appeal to administrators in a neighboring county, and if the neighboring county administrators agree with the other 3 administrators, the violator will be permanently discharged. If the neighboring county administrators disagree with the other 3 administrators, the accused administrator will be restored. Additional operating instructions will be addressed in the administrative handbook, and legal advice can be found at NLA. All administrators will be required to take NLA's 2 courses in order to be certified for the administrative position. Additional courses will be required over time, and as administrators are certified at each advancement, salaries will be adjusted accordingly. On-the-job training is available, providing the applicant appropriately progresses in the required courses. Committeemen are nominated for election by designating petition and elected at the primary. Election Law, subsection 6-118. The nomination of a candidate for election to a party position to be elected at the primary election shall be by designating petition. Whenever there is no contest for such nominations, committeemen are deemed elected at the primary, and it's not necessary to be on the primary ballot. Any committeeman who is not elected by the people within their election district is not an elected committeeman. To date, we have not found an elected committeeman in any state. The chart below shows when the election for committeemen takes place within their respective states. Some of these states have caucuses, which the political party members elect committeemen to party association positions. They are not elected committeemen. Time for filing petition for committeemen is by state. In January, it's Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Florida. In February, it's Nevada, Colorado, Missouri, Arizona, Washington, Georgia, Massachusetts, Ohio, and Tennessee. Virginia, Alaska, Minnesota, Maine, Michigan, Idaho, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and Vermont. In March, it's Kansas, Wyoming, Alabama, Hawaii, Mississippi, American Samoa, Missouri, Illinois, Louisiana. In April, it's Maryland, Wisconsin, Connecticut, Delaware, New York, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island. In May, it's Indiana, North Carolina, West Virginia, Nebraska, Oregon, Idaho, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Texas. And in June, it's California, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota, and Utah. The duties of an elected committeeman. Committeemen are the guardians of our liberty. Committeemen interview the candidates for appointment on the primary ballot. Committeemen require that candidates know the Constitution. Committeemen can prevent unconstitutional legislation. Committeemen have the power to recall politicians and bad behavior. Committeemen guard over the election by witnessing the hand counting of the votes. Committeemen are the guardians of our republic, the consenters of the people. Committeemen can eliminate unconstitutional legislation. Politics. Once we, the people, rightfully and lawfully take back control of our courts and the political process, dirty politicking can be eradicated by simply restraining elected and appointed servants with the chains of the Constitution. There is no place in a lawful republic for our duly elected representatives appeasing special interest groups and private associations in receipt of money by supplanting the will of their constituents and replacing it with the will of special interest groups. That would be a bribe and a crime and a violation of their oaths, placing them in bad behavior and in jeopardy of impeachment, recall, and/or indictment, which would result in the removal from elective office. Likewise, when an elected official supplants the will of their constituents by replacing it with the will of a private party association in order to serve the status quo, this too would place them in bad behavior and in jeopardy of impeachment, recall, and/or indictment that would result in the removal from elective office. To take control of the committeeman process, we need only 4 to 5 people to take executive positions in each county for a total of 250 people nationwide. It is not a conflict of interest for a jury administrator to hold a committeeman position. One is private employment, whereas jury administrators are not government employees, and the other position is an unpaid political position, and both positions seek only to apply the law of the land, one in the courts and the other in the political realm. There are 174,252 election districts in America for each party. Many of these positions are already unlawfully filled, by appointment. Once the elected committeemen take executive leadership control and dismiss the old guard, the elected executive leadership can then lawfully appoint many of the people already filling these positions, as long as they agree to take an oath, vow, and NLA's required courses. We can then teach them to become elected committeemen. Case in point, if the committeeman is ignorant of the law of the land, how can he or she judge the qualifications of the candidates he would be interviewing for elective office? Furthermore, if one can't understand the subject of their oath, how can they take an oath? Resistance. The de facto state executive committee, also known as members of the county committee, from a town are in fact members of a private political party association and are not elected committeemen, who have under the color of law seized control of the committeemen process in all 50 states and will not relinquish power so easily. Said de facto state executive committee party members have a stronghold on state judges who will unjustly maintain the status quo. Therefore, we will need to bring the issue into a federal court of record against all 50 states for constitutional causes, for an order to obey the law of the land concerning the lawful election of committeemen and their unalienable rights secured by the New York State Constitution, Article 1, Bill of Rights, Section 1, protected under Article 4, Section 1, Full Faith and Credit Clause, which states that no member of this state shall be disenfranchised or deprived of any of their rights secured to any citizen thereof to elect a person to a party position for any political party or parties in any unit of representation of the state from which such candidates or persons are nominated or elected. Therefore, before we can open a court of record in the federal court to secure the people's unalienable right to have government by consent via the committeeman elections, we must first have our natural law courts open, restored, and unrestrained in the federal district courts, which will occur after the deep state collapses and critical mass is met. We anticipate that this will be accomplished within the next few months. This will give the people a full year to secure their unalienable rights to have government by consent in the federal courts of record by 2021, when the elected people take their rightful seats as elected committeemen. People are free to express their beliefs, even if those beliefs are unconstitutional. But if said individual runs for elective office and takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution for the United States of America, they are to place their anti-constitutional opinions aside. They cannot, in their official capacity, support and defend such anti-constitutional positions in public office or on the floor of Congress. To do so would be a violation of their oath and place them in jeopardy of impeachment, recall, or an indictment that would result in the removal from elective office. Recapping, in order to take back the political process in 2021, we must have a bare minimum of at least 5 people in every state in both parties properly elected to take lawful control of the party in every state. To accomplish this, candidates for committeemen must file their designated petition on time. Again, as we mentioned the states earlier, 4 states require filing in January, 19 in February, 10 in March, 7 in April, 10 in May, and 6 in June. You can register to become a committeeman. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org/become-committeeman. And to register to become a jury administrator, go to, which is a paid position, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org/jury-administrator. We will be teaching the process the following Mondays from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight, November 4th, 2019, December 2nd, 2019, January 6th, 2020, February 3rd, 2020, March 8th, 2020, April 6, 2020, May 4th, 2020, and June 8th, 2020. Liberty once lost is lost forever. John Adams. Join us to save our republic by learning the science of government by consent. Come to our weekly live open forums every Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time till midnight. Take our free civics course. Learn real American history. Take our government by consent course. Learn how to file a court case. Learn the difference between law and equity. Learn the Constitution. Learn natural law, also known as common law. Learn the true meaning of liberty. Learn how we, the people, can reinstate our natural law courts of justice and save our political process. NationalLibertyAlliance.org. Okay, that brings us to the end of that paper. You know, if we can, let's try to stay focused on the subject matter, which is NLA in a nutshell, what exactly we're doing here, both on the judicial side of things and on the political side of things. So people must have a lot of questions concerning those two subjects, and also particularly about the committeemen, which may be new to a lot of people. Some people may be becoming aware of this for the first time, and kind of surprised that we the people can have so much control. But again, we've been made ignorant. Our schools have been stolen from us. They've robbed us. They're robbing us of our children. They're turning our children into socialists. That's what they teach children in school. That's why there are so many socialists running around. Socialism was introduced quite some time ago. I perceived, I remember a lot of things taking place when I was a kid in the late 50s and throughout the 60s, just things happening, Christmas was turning into Xmas, no more God in school, no more prayer in school. There was the big battle going on already about saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And all these things over time crept into the school and become part of our children's schooling. And today, I'm totally appalled. I've been to these schools numerous times over the past few years, going inside these schools during when they're having different activities, and these kids are politically involved in the things that they shouldn't be politically involved in, such as gun control. Okay, and many things. Whenever there is an event, I remember particularly this one time there was an event where there was a big shooting, and I had was in the school at the time, and I saw these children demonstrating in there concerning the fact that we shouldn't have guns. They were trying to control our guns. So this is what we got today. And we need to re-educate our children. We need to bring them back into a classical education, not teaching them what to think, but teaching them how to think, bringing them to them their heritage and their duties as one of the people, of our nation, of the state that they live in. As one of the people, they should be involved in a lot of things. Everyone should become a committeeman at least one time in their lifetime. It's a 2-year commitment. You work, like I said, about 40 hours a week, a year, which is around the election time, whether it be the primary election or the election itself. And that's about it. So, it's not a lot of work. It's not a big commitment. And it's done in the evenings, okay? So it doesn't interfere with most people work during the day, so it doesn't interfere with that. Even the election day when you're called in to witness the counting of the vote, that's done in the evening also. So again, it doesn't take your time up for most of us who work during the day. But we need to do this, and we need to teach our children to do this. We need to teach our children and ourselves to respond to the call when a grand jury or trial jury is brought into play. For those of us who are entrepreneurs that may not be able to leave your business for a week or two or whatever the requirement might be, I don't see it being any longer than that, and very, very rare cases longer than that. But in any event, you know, you can't leave your business, but maybe in the wintertime you're slow. And so you get the call in the summertime, and you send the message back, letting them know, hey, I can't do it now. I'm an entrepreneur, need to be with my business, but I'm good for February, March if you want to call me. Whatever. People need to participate. Our children need to be learning the things that NLA is teaching, you know, in school. And we are working on a textbook for that purpose, and we are making a plan to take back our schools also. But we can't take back our schools until we first take back the committee man process. And we can't take back the committee man process until we first take back the courts. And we can't take back the courts unless we're active today, learning and educating and preparing to take these positions, becoming educated in the things that we need to be educated, and educating our children. You know, bring your children out here to get into these courses. It's good. It's a good education for them. They're not learning it in school. So if you want to neutralize all the garbage that they're being taught in school to be great little socialists, okay, and if you want to neutralize all that, bring them to our course. Goodness, even bring them to our meetings or let them listen to the MP3s that we, you know, put up on the web every Monday night after we finish our program. But get them involved and talk to them about what they're, encourage them to debate and argue with their teacher. In a polite way, of course, you know, but encourage them. Tell them the truth, you know. Anyway, this is what we the people need to do to take our nation back. Are you going to do it? That's the question. Okay, before we move on, is Brent here? I'm looking, I don't see him at the moment. Brent, if you're here and you don't have a, is that you, Brent? Maybe not.
I don't see him.
Okay. Brent, if you are here, and maybe you're not signed in as a, you know, what would you call us, administrators, I guess? I don't know. Just get into the queue, and hopefully we'll see your number there. Star 6 to get into the queue, and then we'll unmute you if you're not signed in to be able to unmute yourself. I don't see his number up there. I don't see his name, so... Okay, until he gets here, if he gets here, we'll turn things over to him for a little while. So we'll go straight to questions. And again, you know, try what we can. Let's try to focus in on the plan and come to a better understanding. But we're here to answer any questions and take any comments that anybody has. So let us take, and if anybody wants to get into the queue, it's star 6. So let's take our first caller. And Jan, keep an eye for Brent if he comes in, okay?
Okay.
And Terry, maybe you too. Okay, let's take our first caller. Jay, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi there. My name's Jay. I'm in Wisconsin. I don't know if this is interactive where I say something, you say something. I've listened, read along as far as the committee man process is concerned. I don't really have a lot of questions myself. I did just sign up the other day. I'm very familiar with a particular part of the common law known as the common law of agency, excuse me, as far as the fiduciary duties and everything that agents owe to their principals and such. But I have a number of questions. I had written to Carl, and he indicated that this would be the time to ask them. So I don't have any specific questions on the committee man process at this point, but I think that probably most of the things that we would be talking about would all be interrelated anyway. So shall
well, that's
I go ahead?
That's true. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be on the committee man thing. NLA does a lot of things with education, of course, with the judicial process, the political process, our heritage, our the law, court access. So any of those subjects is open game. So what do you got? Or what kind of questions do you have?
Okay, or so comments? Sure. The way that I became aware of National Liberty Alliance was as a result of downloading and listening to Bill Thornton's three-part series on common law courts. And I think he speaks to the Constitution in a little bit of a different fashion, perhaps, than what National Liberty Alliance does. He goes on at great length about the difference between citizens being yoked to the Constitution and being basically subservient to the Constitution versus sovereigns. You know, the people, singular and plural, and how the sovereign stands above the Constitution, which, you know, both ways kind of make sense to me. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on that particular issue?
Yeah, you know, with Bill Thornton, we learned a lot from Bill Thornton. We watched his videos and listened to his audios, which pretty much the same stuff, but, you know, he had a lot of stuff up there online. And we've downloaded, we've been to his site, we've downloaded a lot of his stuff. We've learned a lot from Bill Thornton. We've had communications with him quite some time. We haven't talked with him in a while. We probably should give him a call. But we haven't talked with him in a while. But we used to call him up for, you know, to get a better understanding of things, because he seemed to have been more understanding. He was more involved in research at the time than we were at that time. But as time went on, we do have differences. You know, I'm not aware that he believes that we are in some way subservient to the Constitution, for we the people wrote the Constitution. We ordained and established that Constitution. And I believe he makes that point by putting, if you see the video side of things, he comes in and sits down on a table, and he puts his king's hat on, and he teaches, okay, in part of his thing. And he's making the point that I'm the king, I'm the sovereign. And that would be true, of course, over anybody that's an elected individual in whatever agency or whatever they're in. And that includes the courts. You see, that is exactly why a judge cannot judge me. No man could judge me, because I'm sovereign. I have immunity from their law. Okay, their law is equity. Okay, and they have combined that with other things. But you know, I don't have to answer to them. I have to answer to the law, though, and so do they. They have to answer to the law also. All people have to answer to the law. So in common law, it teaches us, for every injury, there must be a remedy, and in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. Those are two of the major, positions of common law as far as being a truth, okay? But anyway, one of the main differences we have with Thornton, and by the way, we have Thornton's videos and audios included in our civics course. We also have Michael Bodnarik's constitutional courses. I went to his course twice. I think I went to it twice. I'm pretty sure I did. But anyway, I went to his course, and it was like about an eight-hour course. It was very good, but it still was just an introduction. We got a lot of his stuff online, the other speeches and different things he brought up. So we put that together, and we put that into our civics course also. But the big difference with Bill Thornton's position in our position is that he says he's the king of the court. And we went along with that for a while, but we started to have conflict in our understanding as we grew and researched more and more, and discovered, of course, you know, who the true king of the court is. The king of our court is the creator of the universe. So it's nature's God is our king. And we are to do nature's God's will. You know, God tells us in the Bible that he wrote his laws in the hearts of men. We all know right from wrong. You know, even if you've ever listened to some of the interviews with some of these serial killers, okay, they know right from wrong. They clearly know right from wrong. They'll say that they know what they're doing is wrong and whatever. They know right from wrong. And so there's really one simple rule. And that is, do no harm. If you never harm anyone in words or deed or action, then you shouldn't have a problem. But if you injure somebody in some way, and it could be in words or physically or something, then you have to answer to the king of the court. And the king of the court, of course, is God. And since God doesn't sit and rule in every one of our courts, we have 12 individuals called the jury, the tribunal. That principle comes from the Bible. Where 12 individuals have to agree 100% in order to have find someone guilty. If one can't go along with the others and they come to the point and says, hey, we're just, that we can't go any further. We got to set them free. Of course, they've turned all that upside down. They call it, I forget what they call it, but they say it's, I forget what they call that, but in any event, they'll say, well, we got to do the trial all over again, you know. That's not the way it works, no. The whole purpose of the 12 individuals is 12 points of view, 12 different individuals really searching their hearts and their minds and having conversation concerning, oh, yeah, he did say that. You know, I didn't realize he said that, or he did this, or that witness said that. You know, and you bring the whole thing together, and you'll come to a good decision. But when you put one man up there, and slaps his hammer down and throws you into the jail cell or whatever the case may be, we never gave them that authority. That's a tyrant taking that kind of authority. We gave them only authority in the equity courts. And the equity courts are courts that run under U.S. codes. There are 57 of them. We've given Congress the authority to write all those codes with the exception of one. Okay, that's U.S. 26. Never gave them authority to do that one. But we did give them authority. I've been through all the codes. They do have an authority to write all the codes they did in order to control all of the different agencies of government. And so they're able to write the codes and the whatever regulations and statutes they want and so on and so forth. But that can never apply to us. And, of course, back in the 20s and the 30s, they started to insert a lot of things. They came in with the rules in 1934, Rules Enabling Act. That's when they gave the authority to the United States Supreme Court. The bar controlled United States Supreme Court. And the bar controlled Congress, who gave them that stuff. And the bar controlled federal district judges, and coming together to bring the rules. And they wrote in two really seriously bad rules, which they applied to us. First of all, in Rule 2, they rendered the law in equity null and void and replaced it with civil law. They changed our whole law system right there, and they did that by rule, okay? The other thing that they did, which is serious, is they put in Rule 12, and Rule 12 gives them the ability to throw people out of court practically for anything. I mean, they could just make it up, and even if it doesn't apply, they don't care. They do it anyway because they're tyrants. And therefore, anybody that comes up against the establishment, if you're going up against the major corporations, you're going up against the government agencies or anything of that nature, you're going to find yourself being hit with Rule 12 and out of the court. And you could take that up, and I have taken it up to the appellate court, and matter of fact, I'm going up to the Supreme Court soon, hopefully. You're probably not going to hear it, but file for it anyway. So this is, of course, this is the problems we have, and we have to bring this back and bring it back under the control of the people. But anyway, that's how they robbed us. They robbed us of our courts. Men judge us, and these are politically motivated individuals, not only politically but financially motivated, okay, to get the proper ruling and keep us under thumb, and we need to take that back.
Can you hear me at the same time that you're talking?
I didn't hear you until just now, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just wasn't sure whether or not it was a simultaneous back and forth sort of thing.
Yeah, but, it's an open mic.
Okay. Isn't that where Thornton, though, talks about doing things like a counterclaim in order to bring the common law into play and basically having his or our own court? I mean, he agrees entirely with what you just said about sovereigns, that we are sovereign, we are the people, both plural and singular. But he truly does have a lot to say about how citizens are basically beneath. I'll pull together something and try to get it to you as far as Thornton in his own words.
I'm familiar with a lot of his positions, a lot of things he's done. He's had some success in the court. He's had some failures also, like we all have.
Yes.
It's an uphill battle. You lose more than you win, and the position we take is we don't care how many battles we lose, because we've lost a lot, as long as we win the war. And then our founding fathers won the same way. You know, George Washington lost most of the battles. I mean, it was a problem all the way through. He was always outnumbered, outflanked, or had a situation with not enough supplies and so on and so forth, and numerous things. But nevertheless, he won the war, and that's the key. That's what we need to do. And winning the war sometimes is, we brought up in the paper we read the idea of the walls of Jericho, you know, where the children of Israel walked around Jericho for 7 days and shouted. And at the seventh day, they walked around 7 times, and at the end, they shouted, and the walls came down, and they took the city. And that's what we're doing. We're walking around the courts right now. And we are shouting the truth. And, the truth is getting to them. There's no doubt about it, okay? We see some of the things they do, some of the things that they used to do and don't do anymore, at least to us. We see some success here and there. We've had a few successes with a few habeas corpuses. So we've had some different things. And we've had a lot of losses. But again, we're nailing the truth to their door. And when that wall of protection falls down, and you can see it's happening right now, I don't know, especially over the past week or so, it's been really, really intense on what's going on concerning President Trump and the Patriots against the deep state here. I mean, these people are about ready to be exposed. And,
yes, I agree.
And they're losing it. And so when that wall comes down, you see, these judges are protected. That's why they have no fear. Some of them have a fear because they know they're doing wrong, and they still have a fear, and they'll recuse themselves often here or there. We've got a lot of that going on. So there's some judges in there that don't want to play on, but nevertheless, you know, they're between a rock and a hard place. They got a gun to the head. What are they going to do? So we kind of understand that. We're human beings. And so when the time comes and that wall collapses, we expect those individuals that do have a conscience to kind of open their doors to us, and we also expect the evil to either be in jail or hiding under rocks or leaving the country or whatever the case may be. Okay, then that's when we take control. That time is very close, and that's why I'm pushing so hard for people to get educated. If we're not educated to take control of our nation, shame on us. We've got opportunity right now. We've got time right now. Tomorrow is not the time to learn these things. Now is the time to learn these things. Now is the time to take these positions. Now is the time to become informed and get involved and take back our nation, not only for ourselves, but for our posterity also. So,
is there some current way for us to use the common law to force our servants to adhere to the Constitution? Because the vast majority of the problems that go on today, politically speaking,
can you repeat that? Is there some what?
Is there some current way for us to force? No. Okay.
It's not. I can't say no absolutely. Look, here's the thing, okay? Because we've had success in a couple of places that we never thought we'd get success. We had success against the IRS, okay, in a federal court. And that's only because at the time, at the time we didn't really realize what it was that we said that really took the case back. But with looking back, we know what it is. But nevertheless, you see, if you understand what they're doing, And you're able to respond to everything they throw at you, and if you can control the narrative, and you could put that federal judge's rear end, in trouble. If he doesn't have a place to hang his hat, so to speak, you know, they worry, and so a lot of those judges will try to solve the problem and get the case out without throwing you out if you're already in and they can't get you out at that point, because once they pass a certain point, they can't use Rule 12 on you. But in any event, when you're in the court and the judge kind of realizes you know what's going on and you know the game and you're signaling him with different things, the way you write things, maybe about Rule 2 or certain other things that not many people know about, they get worried, okay? And in this particular case that I'm talking about, what happened was they went behind the scenes and said to the U.S. attorney representing the IRS and others and said, look, I want this out of my court. Do something. And within 2 weeks, and when we left the courtroom, that judge said he was going to make all kinds of decisions. And he never did. He never did. But we did get a response from the enemy, and it was a really good response, and that was settled. But they don't stop. They're relentless. They continue to come out after the people. They continue to do their evil. But it's very difficult to really win in the courts.
Hey, John.
It's a chess game. Go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah, just for Jay's benefit, he's talking about Thornton and Citizen and all that. And I think what will show the difference between Thornton and us, like look at the 14th Amendment. A 14th Amendment citizen doesn't have unalienable rights, so to speak. I mean, everybody has them, but according to the belief when they put the 14th Amendment in, which we believe was unconstitutional, they didn't need it. Those were rights that the state gave those people, which means that they weren't sovereign. They got whatever rights the 14th Amendment said they had. And so they operate under that, and Thornton calls them citizens. Well, we believe Thornton gives too much credibility to the fiction, to that fiction that took over, you know, illegally and unlawfully, you know, because we don't believe that there's any such thing as a 14th Amendment citizen, and therein is the difference, you know, because he's recognizing. And the other game that they play is, you know, they play this equity game, and so when you answer them and you're in their courts and stuff, as far as they're concerned, you've contracted with them, and it's a contract deal, and it has nothing to do with the Constitution. So they're always playing word games and running this thing down a path that they can control. So I think that's that whole citizen and sovereign thing. That's where he gets that from. That if you're if you call yourself a citizen, but listen, early in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, our forefathers called themselves citizens. It wasn't a bad connotation, but they played word games, and they turned it into a commercial thing, and then what they did is they took over our rights using this ruse to pull the wool over people's eyes. And the trouble is even Thornton, who's very, very smart, he gives that fiction that they created too much credibility. It's fraud.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I actually had here in a little note that I made that I did.
Hello, John, can you hear me?
What happened? He got stepped on or thrown out.
I don't know. The cue came on and it said to go ahead and ask your question.
I don't know where John went either.
Well, you might be able to have.
Yeah, I was muted. I didn't know. Is Jay still here?
No, Jay got kicked out, and now we have Steve, and I think it's Steve from Oklahoma.
Oh, okay. Well, let me unmute Jay again, and he's been unmuted. Hang on, Steve. Let's finish with Jay, and then Steve,
yeah,
you can go next.
Sentence, and then
absolutely.
We won't
Sounds
mute
good.
You. Just be quiet while you're there for a minute, okay? Go ahead.
I'll try to be brief, but basically what I was saying is I find it to be interesting you bring that up, because in my notes that I made for myself as far as questions, I put in there that I disagree with Thornton's interpretation of the 14th Amendment. I think there's enough background documentation in terms of how that amendment was brought about, that it had very specific purposes. But Thornton likes to say that by that amendment that we were all yoked to this concept of citizenship. And I don't agree with that as far as what he had to say. So I'm on board with you.
And bear in mind, you know, we all have our, the thing is are we willing to listen to others bring up that concern of our error, and that we might change our way if we indeed are in error. So, and we do try hard to make sure that we reconsider everything we might say if someone brings something up in opposition. But let me just read a little bit of this 14th Amendment, and it is really repugnant to the Constitution, totally repugnant. It's it was done in order to enslave us. It was part of many pieces of constructive law literally going all the way back to the beginning, okay? But it says this. This is the 14th Amendment, and it's in Section 1 particularly. It says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States, and here's the key problem, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. So their definition of a citizen of the United States, they've changed the meaning of that word, but their definition of being a citizen of the United States, okay, is to be subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. I am not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. I am subject to no one but God himself. And that's what makes me a sovereign. And so I have unalienable rights. I am a citizen. I won't use that word in a court, but I am a citizen. Our founding fathers used that word. We didn't have a problem. But we are not held accountable to anything, any laws or anything that they write, because they don't have the power or the authority to write anything about us. You know, they also changed the meaning of an infamous crime. An infamous crime, clearly, okay, and you go to Black's Law to find this out very quickly. An infamous crime is a crime that requires or that gets a jail sentence, okay? That's an infamous crime. So if you have to go, if you did something and you need to go to jail for something, then that's an infamous crime. Whereas they will tell you that, you know, they can put you in jail, these town courts and village courts, which are not courts of record, have no power or authority to put you in jail anyway. But nevertheless, they'll put you to jail up to 1 year, and they say they could do that because these are not infamous crimes. They call them, misdemeanors, I guess. So again, they change everything. The Rules Enabling Act changed everything. You know, the Organic Act of 1871 made huge changes, started the municipality, the municipal law, and working together with the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, that gave the authority and the power really to push forward that agenda of municipalities. Corporations as municipalities everywhere, every town, every village, every state, every county. There are except few exceptions, I hear, but they're all turned themselves into municipalities, and they all write their own law, and they all come out and beat up the people with their law and make money. It's RICO on steroids, and we need to deal with that. We can't deal with it now. But we can and will once we take control of the judicial process. Okay, we got to move to our next caller, though, I think.
I just wanted to say that what they're talking about, subject to the jurisdiction of, they're talking about the corporation that they created. That corporation is supposed to be themselves. They make rules. We gave them powers in the corporate United States to make rules for themselves.
And that's a municipality.
That's right. That's not us, though.
Right.
They can't just suck you in there. Of course, it can be you if you acknowledge that. If you're dumb enough to respond, you know. Under, you know, they use certain principles of common law they're even in place in our court. Silence is acquiescence, basically. If you don't answer, the presumption is that you agree, right? So that's the type of stuff they do. They put stuff out there, and if nobody says anything, then it carries. So, you know, if you're in there and you're answering in their corporate thing and you're responding, they're going to assume that you're part of that corporation, basically. That's my view. Anyway, we don't want to get lost to that. We'd go forever, but that's kind of
right.
The story.
We're going to move to our next person. You can have 10 more seconds if you want to make a last statement, Jay. And you can get back into the queue. You know, you may even be able to come back up again. But, go ahead, what were you saying?
Uh-huh. I'm just going to say there's probably nothing I can wrap up in 10 seconds other than
get back into the queue and you can wrap it up later.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's take another caller here. Let me mute to Jay for now, and then we'll take Stephen. You've been unmuted already, so you got the mic. From Oklahoma,
hey,
are you?
John.
Good.
What's
yourself?
That?
You're from Oklahoma?
Yes, sir. I am. Oklahoma City.
Okay.
I just had actually a really quick question. You were going over the committee man whenever the election was going to come up for each month in the state, and I missed it, but when is it going to be coming up for Oklahoma again?
Okay, for Oklahoma, and by the way, you can get a copy of this. It's on our front page, just a wee bit down, right before the first video, you'll see we have National Liberty Alliance's NLA's plan in a nutshell. So you can click on that, and it's the written version. And we did do, and I see a few errors in here as I was going through this, and I even made some errors as I was reading it, but we'll fix that up for the video. We're doing a PowerPoint video of this very same thing so that people can get a basic idea and understanding what we're doing. But you said Oklahoma, right?
Yes.
Oklahoma. Let's see. Oklahoma. Where are you? Oh, there you go. You're in February. But that may or may not be true. And I need help on this. Anybody that goes to become a committee man, okay, I'll be keeping my eyes out. You know, anybody who signs up to be a committee man, you go to our page, you sign up to be a committee man, you fill out the form, you click the button, and pop. Now you've decided to become a committee man. You signed up for the courses, so you're getting educated. And then your name and phone number, and not your address or anything like that, but a name, phone number,
right,
county, and state, will go to a page where it'll be viewable only by other committee men. So this will allow people in their own counties and their own states to get together, because we got to really work the states. We can take back the political process by only 5 people in every state. You just take over the executive committee. And once you take the executive committee, then you can deem elected all of the other elected committee men once you get rid of the troublemakers, you know, the poor party bosses. And believe me, they're not going to like you at all. They're going to leave. They're just not going to stay there. When they're pushed out by a court decision, they're going to get so upset and angry, and they have no more power or authority. And we have a lot to teach about this, and there's a lot we can teach over time, you know, concerning the rules and the process and how things work. And maybe it's not really a lot, but, you know, it's a conversation. It takes a little time.
Definitely.
But anyway, 5 people in every state can take it back. Now, whenever anybody signs up, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on the list. And as this state, you know, someone from this state comes in or someone from that state comes in, I'm going to ask them to go get a hold of their party rules. Sometimes party rules are hard to get. No, I'm sorry. Let me step back on this. We don't need the party rules because we don't care about the party rules. We're going to nullify all that. No, we need the election law of the state, okay? So if people can find the election law for that state, and anybody wants to do that right now for their state, you know, this week or something, then get a hold of a copy of the election law of their state and get it to Jan@NationalLibertyAlliance.org. And we can start looking at that. Now, I have a feeling if I go looking into these laws, we're going to find out that pretty much everything they're doing. Let me give you an example. Here in New York, being in April for New York, we run for committeeman. And that's when even the unelected committeemen walk the election districts in order to have sign-on people to get onto the ballot. And they also at the same time go out and get their own signatures for themselves to be the committee man on the even years. And they do it odd and even, so they oscillate the powers. That's how they maintain control. But in any event, they go out and walk their petition during a certain time period. It's like a 5 or 6 week window. And between a certain date, which I think is a 1 week window or a 10-day window, you have to file your petition. And again, if anybody's running against you, then you go onto the ballot. But trust me, no one's running against you. We'll be running against each other if 2 people run for the same election district, so we don't want to do that. And you can move over to the next election district within your town, only within your town. You cannot run an election district in someone else's town. It's got to be your town. So in any event, you get on
what
to...
I'll do is, I'll go ahead, and you said that you needed somebody to look up the election laws for their state or for their county.
Right, yeah. If you can get us a copy, then I will go back, and I'll be looking at every one of these states and maybe making some adjustments of really what the law says and opposed to what they're doing. Because a lot of these, I think a lot of the people in January and February, they're probably doing caucuses. And even some places here in New York, they do a caucus. That's not an elected. You know, caucus is where all of the, you know, the political people that are politically involved and running the party politics, and they're involved with the politicking, okay, you know, they come together and they elect themselves. Well, you got to be elected from the people in your election district. You can't be elected by someone else in someone else's election district. And, right. And so, you see, you're not they're not elected. The other thing is they changed the title, and we'll be talking about that also in the video that we put together. They changed the title from committee man to members of the county committee. And back
I didn't
in
see that, because I was looking up committee man, and I was actually going to see if I could find it online, and it said instead of committee man, it said those part of the committee or national committee or something like that.
Well, anything but committee man. It right here in New York, it's member of the county committee. Gerard and I went up to the Capitol to look in the archives there to find out the law going back as far as we could. And we found some very interesting things. But it was in 1909 we had the last law, and that wasn't available. You know, that particular book wasn't available for us. And only by the stroke of luck, someone walking by as we were talking to one of the receptionists heard us talking about the 1909 law, because we only had 1911. So anything before 1911 we didn't have. And the person walking by who worked with the archives said, oh, yeah, we got that. But they didn't have it in book form. It was in microfiche, okay? And as a matter of fact, we've got that up. I don't know what – I think we have it. Well, we may not have it up on our page, but we do have a copy of that.
What
yeah.
happened is somebody had ripped the page out of the book because
– Oh, that's what it was, yes.
Back
yes.
then, you know, these laws were only kept in major population centers. So when they wanted to play a game or whatever, if they could keep that from the people, so they ripped the page out, that's in Albany. That means you had to get on a horse and drive to Binghamton, which was probably a 4, 5, 6 days ride. So it wasn't in the book. And we said, where's that page? And the woman that was in there, she said, oh, yeah, I remember that. There was a page ripped out of one of the books. I mean, what's the chances of this, that somebody would remember that? This woman that must have been there forever. You know, and she says, it's on microfiche, and she gave us the microfiches. And I'll tell you what, it took us a good couple of hours to find it on microfiche. But we did find it.
And and on top of that, you know, look at the law from 1909 to 1911 here in New York State was a huge change. I mean, they just filled the law books up with laws, statutes, and everything, and applying it to the people. You know, they may not have exercised it back then, but they were preparing for the exercising, because today it's being exercised. You know, we have laws for this, and the county laws, you've got state laws, you got New York City laws, you know, you got the federal laws. I mean, we're under so many laws. They literally, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, the thickness of the law is probably tenfold between 1909 and 1911 here in New York. But in the election law, there's one of the main things that they took out is subsection 21. That's the page that was ripped out, and we did find it, and that was the Washington Clause, and I don't think I talked about the Washington Clause in this thing, but we'll be talking about that, where it talks about private associations taking control of, so you now know why they pulled out subsection 21, okay? And then when they changed the law, subsection 21 is eliminated altogether in 1911. The Washington Clause was that no private association shall become a political party, and yet we have two private associations. When you have a place that is incorporated in themselves, have buildings and phones and secretaries and offices and playing all these political games and, you know, and getting everyone that's a Republican to do this and everyone that's a Democrat to do that, none of this is the business of the people. And so that's what we had discovered, the big law change. But in any event, even the 2011 and on, right up to date, because we have right up, I think we have up to 2000, goodness, I forget what year we did this in, we got it up, I think 2012 or something, but we have. And in the law, it still has. Well, they wrote in the members of the county committee. And that's how they run as non-elected. They're elected by the private association. But hidden and in the strangest of language is still a clause for the elected committeemen. I guess they just couldn't take that out. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to read that clause. We read it tonight. It's Election Law, subsection 6-118. It says, the nomination of a candidate for election to a party position to be elected at the primary election. You see, you're elected at the primary election.
Mm-hmm.
Shall be by designating petition. Now, they've made this language a little strange because when you have the understanding of being a member of the county committee and you read that clear language and then you read through this, it kind of washes away the fact that they're talking because they kind of put it in a strange way. Let me read it again. The nomination of a candidate for election to a party position to be elected at the primary election shall be by designating petition. Okay? And people don't read the election law anyway. It's not a book that you pick up and read, you know. But in any event, we've looked at this. We see the game. We saw that they did. We went into Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, California, and quite a few other states. Couldn't find an elected committeeman anywhere. They're all under the same fictional spell, you know. So.
I did see one part when I was trying to find out the laws and the elections for the committeemen. When I went onto the official government page in Oklahoma, and I had these different representatives, and it was talking about how they were. I had saw somebody that was associated by AT&T, and one by Cox Communication, one by these different kind of private companies that they were associated with, but they were representative, and it had it right there underneath their title, and I thought that was very strange and weird in and of itself.
Yeah, it's really been bastardized. Yeah, it's really bad. What we need, though, remember, the party rules mean nothing. That's a private association rules. It has nothing to do with we the people, okay? And we had a convention here in New York. We had about 30 people, roughly, I don't know, that came together in a convention. That were all elected committeemen from different counties here in New York. And we came together and rewrote the rules. When we take that back, we're going to insert those rules. We're going to share those rules with other states, and they can do what they want. But they need to free themselves from the tyranny, from the tyrants, from the guy with a hammer who thinks he controls the whole thing. I mean, look what's going on in Congress. You know, they got the same problem. The committeemen have the same problem that Congress has. You got these party bosses controlling the whole thing and, you know, preventing things from coming to the floor and sticking to the business that they want to stick to, and private counting of the votes, bringing in, votes from others that claim that they've got, I forget what they call that, but bringing in votes, when it's going to be lost. And they make it look like the committeemen are involved. They make it look like they get a vote, and they make it look like they get something, but not happening, not at all. So we got to take this whole process back.
You know, the funny thing is that if you walk your petition and you turn it in, they still have to accept it. When we did that, they wanted us to come in and kiss the ring of the county chair, which we refused to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have to stick by that process. They cannot get rid of that process because that's the constitutional process. So what they do is they make it look like it's constitutional. When we walked our papers, we didn't put member of the county committee. We put down committee man. Nobody addressed that. They just said, oh, come on in and we'll put you in a place. And, you know, we already got somebody in that committee. In that area, we'll put you in another area. No, if there's somebody already that walked papers in a district, they're supposed to put you both on the ticket. And then people can actually pull your lever, and then you know, if there's nobody running against you, you're deemed elected during the primary. But if there's somebody running against you in your election district, they have to put you on the ballot. When's the last time you saw a committeeman name on the ballot? They just don't do it anymore. They make sure it doesn't happen, you know?
Right.
I have seen it firsthand too of going up against the status quo of challenging their power or whatnot and seeing them throw a temper tantrum right then and there. I got arrested not too long ago, a couple of years ago, for not handing my ID over. And then I met the judge. You know, he asked me my name, and I told him I was a beneficiary, and he, you know, sent me to the cell and It was a whole bunch of, it was a big show, and nothing really came of it until I got squeezed into a point to do it. But I understand the what they're doing as opposed to what is being said in the public eye. But I was also wondering, too, whenever we do the petition and we have somebody sign the petition for the committee man, do they have to be registered voters?
Yeah. They have to be registered in your party. If you're running as a Republican committee man, they got to be Republicans. And that's another problem we've had with these people. We didn't directly have this problem, but the guy who taught us these things, they were having these problems, but a lot of them were being solved by the work that he was doing, a guy named Lenny Roberto. But he was telling us about that they wouldn't give out the name, you know, the walking lists, and or they wouldn't get it to you in time. They just try to stop you from getting the walking list. They'll tell you, oh, you got to go talk to the committee chairman to get that walking list. And but it's at the Board of Elections where it's generated from, and they're the ones that should give it to you. We were able to get the whole state, so we're able to divide that up and pass it out to the people in different counties in order to get this going. But the key thing is bringing it back to the people in control, getting rid of the party bosses, the guy with the hammer. Look, if he gets out of control, it only takes 51 to 50 to drop that guy and put a new person in there. The guy with the hammer is only there to maintain order and keep things flowing, not restricting things from coming to the floor and into the
like
table. You know,
bipartisan.
Yeah. So we wrote all this up. We wrote all this up in rules, and we will bring them back out once we start taking over, and we will offer it to the people of other states to and we will suggest strongly for them to adopt it. Maybe they'll get some other ideas and make it better. That's fine. But certainly you don't want to take power. You don't want to take away the rules we wrote that prevent the people from taking power. Okay? We can't have it. And but in any event, that's we're working and we're going to get that out, and I'm hoping and praying that we can get at least 5 people in every state to run. The key thing for better for that would be 5 people for every county, but nevertheless, it could be done with 5 people from every state. And again, it can literally be done with 1, but remember, you'll be standing alone, so we really need 5 people. Okay.
Okay, right. I will look up those election laws and I'll get the email over to Jan.
Okay. All right, yeah, anybody out there can find the election. We don't need election law in New York. We got that. So, but any election law from any state, anybody can get. Maybe people can go out during the week and look around and maybe even pull more than one state, pull other states, but see what you can get to us. Okay, we're going to take our next caller. Yeah, you want to take the board?
We have some announcements tonight.
I forgot all about that.
I thought I'd remind you.
After we take the announcements, Gerard, you want to take the board? Did we lose Gerard?
No, I'm here. I was muted. What'd you say?
Do you want to take the board after the announcements?
Sure.
Okay. All right. What's the announcements, Jan? And maybe questions. I don't know. Maybe you have written questions,
too.
We have
4 or 5 questions as well. First announcement, we're back to where we could use some more help for the Welcome Committee. If you have any inclination in that area and would like to help out, it involves calling people on the phone, talking to them. All new members should be called and talk about what NLA does and get them familiar with the website and everything. And if you're interested, you can either email me, Jan, at National Liberty Alliance, or Ron, I think, is at nationalliberalliance.org as well. The second thing is we do have this Red Pill Expo coming up on the 8th and 9th, which I think is next weekend. We have 2 people currently interested in attending, and if we can get 6 people on the general admission, we can have a table there free. I think the tables are normally around $500, so it would be a real boon for us. We do have 2 people that are volunteered already. Now, we need 4 more. If you'd like to see what the schedule is, they have some great speakers. They have.
Yeah, I wish I could go.
Yeah, me too. Some of them are really sound fascinating. They're going to go down to with a lot of different topics. And you can look up the speakers list and their topics at redpillexpo.org. Take a look at it. I think you'll be amazed. Dan Scadams is one who has offered to be one of the attendees and help man the table. Now, the early bird ticket prices have gone by. They were good till October 13th, and they were $155 for the whole session. I think it goes up $10 or $20 every week after that. Now, the VIP tickets, if we get four people, we only need four. They are more expensive. They're $285, and that includes two lunches and a VIP dinner if you're into that sort of thing. And again, that price was for the 13th of October, and it does go up. The venue is the Rising Star Ranch Resort. It's a great place for vacationing, great place for kids. Bring your wife and the kids along. Room prices range from $69 to $139 if you mention the Red Pill Expo. Some of the deals come with breakfast. I understand they have a great family room and a rate that has a king-size bed and a bunch of bunk beds might hold up to six or eight people. So let's see if we can't get some people together and get somebody out there to the conference. It would be great. It would give us a real opportunity to meet people who are interested in a lot of things like we are.
Where's the conference again?
Where?
Yeah.
It's in Mesquite, Nevada. It's outside of Las Vegas, I think 50 to 60 miles.
Okay. So if anybody wants to get out there and during the time period and participate and listen to some great speakers, you know.
It would be a fun expo to go to.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I wish I could go.
Yep.
Okay, what else you got?
We have some questions. First question is from a woman who was arrested for a traffic stop, and she didn't feel she needed to give her name, to the police officer, so he proceeded to tell her he was going to pull her out of the car. And she grabbed her phone to call her husband, and he and several other troopers came and pulled her out of the car, handcuffed her. In the process, one of them, a lieutenant, somehow cut his finger, so now she's being charged with assault and battery of a police officer. And she's just kind of wondering what she can do now at this point. She's been studying.
Habeas corpus.
Yep.
That's about it. Look at when you get stopped. I've been stopped lots of times by cops. And I will tell you, most of the time, they let me go. Even though they may even have a ticket potentially on me, they let me go. I don't argue with them. If they ask for my license, I figure they're looking for some ID for some reason, maybe whatever. I want to have a license because sometimes I drive commercially. It's been a long time, but I do. And if I do, I have it. But it's a good form of ID also. But look, until we can change things, that's not where we want to make the battles. I mean, yeah, you can go learn in traffic court, learn a little bit about arguing in court. And I really, you know, I used to think that would really give us a lot. You know, I guess it'll help, you know, because then you're just getting some experience in a court and speaking in a court and speaking to a judge and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't make too big a stink, and definitely don't give the cop out there a hard time, because they're going to arrest you. That's what they're going to do. You know, we have a member who did this, you know, refused the information to a cop, and they get dragged out of the car, literally beat the hell out of him. His face was all messed up and everything. And the cops were dumb, though, because they arrested him for resisting arrest. And then the question became, well, what were you arresting me for so that I resist? And they didn't have an answer for that one. And they usually don't. They're so stupid. It's pretty bad. They must be really low IQ'd cops, those particular cops. But in any event, you know, it's not worth it. Take your battle to the higher place. Get involved with what we're doing. We're in the federal court. We're up against the United States Supreme Court, and we're looking for liberty. We're looking for the restoration of the law. And we're declaring that we have our independence and our sovereignty, and you need to obey us. And that's the real fight. But learning in the other courts are fine, but be careful. Don't get yourself arrested. Just don't let it go that far. Was there a second part? The solution to that woman's problem is the habeas corpus. We just redid the habeas corpus. And I think it's a lot more powerful than it was before. And what's good about the habeas corpus is we've been filing papers now for quite some time. And by the way, Jan, how's that going? This latest filings, have we got that out yet? Starting to get that out?
Yeah, the last one he gave me went out.
Wow, that was pretty quick then. Yeah. Okay, that's the two-pager one, right?
No, the one before that, not the two-pager.
Okay.
Yep.
The two-pager.
Yep.
Okay. All right. You know, we try to file papers every week and keep them busy. They know who we are. They know of us. We've had judges recuse themselves as soon as our papers went through. Of course, the fixer comes in and they'll do the dirty deed. But nevertheless, there are some judges out there that know. We require the chief judge in the federal district to hear the case of the habeas corpus. That's what we require. And I think we got a very powerful paper written up for that. And they get 5 days. It's 3 days that they have to respond, which is about 5 days because, you know, the day you get the paper and give them another day grace. So you got 5 days. And after that, then we order the release through the courts and through the judge, the chief judge. And he is facing, the chief judge is facing indictment should they not take the paperwork serious and go forward and take this into a court of record. If they take it into court of record and the court of record could be proven that this person needs to be held, then that's one thing. But we're in courts of jurisdictions unknown, and they have no power, no authority, and it's no due process given, and that's a problem. But anyway, we're doing habeas corpuses again. We got five of them going through the process. I think Jim said he might have a sixth one, so we might have six of them going through the process. I'd like to try to get them all filed at the same time. And so five different chief judges and five different federal districts are going to get the papers, and we're going to see what they're going to do with it. This particular one, well, we'll see what happens. Okay, what else we got?
Okay, hearing the president is in more danger than normal on the Dave Hodges show and others, particularly since the decision to pull out of Syria. Can you please elaborate?
Provide a what?
Can you please elaborate on the fact that the president is more in danger since he made this move to pull out of Syria?
Well, I don't think he's in any more danger than he's been in for the past 3 years. And the next year to come, and 4 more years he's going to get until these people are put away, you know. But we do have from Q, as a matter of fact, this was just brought up recently, Arts and TV, what's that guy's name, Bernie over there. He was bringing up some of the old points that Q had thrown out. And one of the things that Q has put out on a couple occasions is the president is safe. We got a total control over it. He's 100% insulated. That's what military intelligence is telling us through Q. So I honestly think it's something we have to worry about. And other than that, there's other reasons why I think this is going to be successful and they're not going to get to him. But that's all I got for that. What else?
Okay. It is disheartening to hear fairly frequently what appears to be a hopeless message on dealing with courts before a change of the guard, e.g., there is no constitution. They are using admiralty law. They are using UCC. The UCC can also be used by us for our protection. Is there a reason NLA is not promoting this? At least two law clubs I know of are teaching this. NLA has some beautiful memoranda of law, but where is the UCC defense?
Because we're not under UCC. We're not under, the law of the sea. And they're really not applying admiralty law against us, nor are they applying UCC purely against us. They may use some of the... Well, they've created a system to insulate themselves through that, okay? And they make money through that. And once you go and start playing in their sandbox and you're not one of the players, who is this guy? They're going to take you out, okay? We do have a member a couple of years back who was involved with this, and he used this, and he got $100 and some odd thousand dollars from them. using the UCC thing, and he got his check, he cashed it, and 30 days later they broke down his door. Okay, he happened to not be at home at the time, and I'd gotten a few calls from him since then, you know, over time, and he was on the lam, so to speak. They were looking for him, obviously. So I don't know if he's ever – eventually they're going to get him, okay, and they're going to put him in jail for that. We had a group in in Colorado, okay, who started playing games with that stuff and started to go after and putting liens down. And they started to come into the meetings that they were having that was sponsored by National Liberty Alliance. And we cut them off. We had to get involved and cut these people off. We told them they were going to go to jail. They shouldn't be playing around with this. And they got hooked up with, what was that woman's name, Gerard? It was trying to teach what we're teaching. Judge Anna von Ritz. Anna von Ritz. So Anna von Ritz, okay, kind of was poisoning that group. And also I think she was probably poisoning some other groups. But she was poisoning that group. And we got to the point where we had to write a paper and post it on the site and disconnect ourselves from them, cut them away, and move them away from our membership. Since that time period, not long after, I can't say 6 months or I can't say a year, but sometime after, most of those people went to jail. And they're in jail right now, in federal prison. Why? Because they're playing in a sandbox they don't belong in. Okay? Why are we going to use the fiction to save our republic? Why don't we use the law? Brent brings this up often. The cure for, I'm going to say it a little different than he said it, I think. But anyway, the cure for lawlessness is the law. Okay? So our position is the same. The cure for lawlessness is the common law, the natural law. Let's bring the law up. Let's use the law. And you see, we are purists here, and we're going to stay purists. We're going to stick on history. We're going to stick on common law, and we're going to hold those grounds. We've got everything we need in common law. We have a constitution, and everything they do is fictional. And to say that that the people are under admiralty would not be true either. At least if they followed the certain rules and the certain statutes, at least you'd be able to know what they're doing and try to work around it. But they don't even follow that. They literally make it up as they go. I mean that. They literally make it up as they go. So I call it jurisdictions unknown. We have no idea what jurisdiction we're in when we walk into these courts of law. The only thing we do know is not the jurisdiction of natural law. We're not in a court of law. We're in a court of craziness, a court of fiction, de facto court of fiction. So, anyway, we're not going to get involved with that stuff. Go ahead, Gerard.
There was a couple out there years ago that I was following, Brad Barnhill and his wife, and they used the UCC all the time. And, you see, when you're driving, you are under the commercial code. And, you know, if you study the UCC and you know how to use it, you can have results. But these guys, they'd get results after they got beat up, thrown in jail. They spent their whole lives going from jail to jail to jail to make a point. And I guess it was okay with them because they were kind of like missionaries, you know, using the UCC. And they would get out, and then they would put lawsuits, valid lawsuits, not anything baloney, using the UCC. The trouble with the UCC is it was written for the cabal. So if you get in there and you figure out a way around something, they just change it. They fixed the loophole that you found how to get around them. So you won the battle, but you didn't win the war, basically. And you can win, but it's so convoluted and it changes so much. And they threw them in jail anyway, even though they knew what they were talking about, because they knew the law better than the judges and the attorneys did. But eventually they prevailed. And they'd get out, and they would have a lawsuit against these judges, and they would always, not only the judges but the police officers, and they would always settle out of court, and that's how they supported themselves. But half the time they were in jail. Honestly, no lie. His wife got thrown in jail. I mean, you can't have kids and do that. She was in jail 6 weeks one time before she got out. So
yeah, Michael Bodnarik also. He told us the stories. He was in jail a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, they did the same thing like him. They drove around with their own plates. Now, listen, if you win and you stay in that county, what happens is the cops all get to know you and they leave you alone because they get the word, don't bother these people because, you know, when they bring a lawsuit, they're going to lose, and they know that. But you can't just go across the United States with your cardboard plates and think you're not going to have trouble in every town and every city you go through where they don't know you, you know?
Besides that, they may fall apart in the rain, too. But
yeah, whatever. You have them made up with steel. But the thing is Bagnarik sticks in his own county, and what he's done is he's schooled them, and they don't mess with him because he's won these lawsuits, and they don't want to keep losing them. But it's a heck of a battle. It's ridiculous. And you know, and there again is that fiction again. You know, you're playing with the fiction. Anyway, I'll rest.
Okay. All right, we're going to move to our next caller. We've got quite a few people in the queue, so.
One more question.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
What proofs are there that we, the people, directed in our founding documents that our Constitution and or our natural rights must be adhered to by our servants?
The Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God, okay? We, the people, and we made a covenant with God to live under his law, and not the law of man, but to live under his law, and in return, we receive his blessings of liberty, unalienable rights. And it's clearly laid out exactly that way. If you read very carefully through the Declaration of Independence, it's a covenant. That's the foundation of our law. It's the foundation of our nation. Upon that is built, of course, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Okay, and in the Constitution, when you read the Constitution very carefully, is we the people ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. We the people ordained. We the people established. Who ordains? A king ordains. Of course, we're not the king of the court, but we're the kings of the great king. You know, read that in the Bible. Jesus Christ is the King of Kings, okay? And we are kings also, but kings, you know, to rule our own household, to rule our own domain of what property we have and so on. But nevertheless, the bottom line is that we have liberty, and we've placed the government under the Constitution. We the people established and ordained the Constitution for the United States of America, all governments. And so they're under the Constitution, being obedient to that. They can write all the laws they want appropriately for the authority we gave them, particularly in Article 1, Section 8, so they can write all the laws. They've written plenty of titles. They all seem to be appropriate, with the exception of the Internal Revenue Code, U.S. 26. And then, of course, they started to stick a lot of little things here and there in order to create their fiction. So inside this stuff is a lot of poison, too. But it doesn't apply to the people. Even the United States Supreme Court has ruled that the people are above that. This is for bureaucrats. It's not for the people. We're under the law. We're not under the law of men. We're under the law of God. So right there, it clears the language. And our founding fathers, there's lots of statements they've made, lots of statements from the United States Supreme Court. We have brought this together and put in a paper. I'd have to think about what paper we actually wrote. We quote these things quite often. We did do a paper specifically on that. Okay, we done?
We have a couple more. Are there any SCOTUS directives stating as much?
Any SCOTUS directives stating? What we just talked about?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've quoted that in a lot of our paperwork. Read our paperwork, you'll find it. Hey, look at our paperwork is an education, okay? Learn to read the paperwork with the footnotes. We put the footnotes there so the people who aren't familiar with what's going on and some of the language, that's the purpose of the footnotes, okay? And we give the source and information. We get a lot of information in the footnotes. We explain the meaning of words in footnotes. We make it clear what we're actually saying. But it's an education. We make it clear for them so they don't twist our words around. but we also clarify it for teaching purposes. So look at, just by reading our paperwork, you will get one heck of an education just reading our paperwork. And so anyway, that's about it. But yeah, there's lots of decisions made by the United States Supreme Court.
Okay. I am arguing before the Third Department that our servants, not the people, must seek and secure from SCOTUS an interpretation other than the plain meaning of the language. In other words, if a servant wants to impose their will or their different interpretation upon us, they must need to get permission from SCOTUS first.
Well, they may have set it up that way, but once we, the people, take back power and authority, if we're going to do that, it's up to you people. You're going to do it. You're going to take these positions. You know, there's a job position as administrators. We need 15,000 administrators. That's a paid position, a career position, a rewarding position, a powerful position. You can be partaking in bringing this nation back under the law. And or becoming a committee man. If you're working a job and you can't become an administrator, become a committee man. Again, 40 hours a week, couple hours in the evening around the election times, and it's pretty simple, cut and dry. Okay, get involved. Repeat the question again.
Okay, I'm arguing before the Third Department that our servants, not the people, must seek and secure from SCOTUS an interpretation other than the plain meaning of the language.
Okay. Going back to, you know, this is sort of like getting permission from them. Again, we take back the system. We turn that back and upside down. They got to get permission from us. We seek no leave from any court. We seek no permission from any court. And here is the most important thing, to understand the difference between law and equity. Equity has nothing to do with the people. The United States Supreme Court has no power, no authority in courts of law, with the exception of one thing, okay? Well, there are a couple places where we give them authority in bankruptcy and that type of thing, but that gets back into commercial process and everything, so, and there is an actual title for that, so probably one shouldn't even have brought that up. But here's the key thing again, okay? They have written all of these titles by authority. That authority came from us, we the people. We got our authority from God through a covenant, the Declaration of Independence. So it goes downhill from God with the covenant we made with him to we the people ordained and established for them. And they have the power and the authority in the equity courts only. Now, it is true that their jurisdiction of the United States Supreme Court is in both equity and law. But they only have power and authority in the law side, okay, falls upon when someone's unalienable rights are being violated. They have a duty to hear that and correct that. That's why you move a case to federal court for cause. You don't give you an example. If you're in a court and that court doesn't have jurisdiction, you're not getting due process. So you move that case into a federal court within that federal district for cause. That cause is a constitutional cause, okay? And their decision on that case can only be for that cause, not for the case that you're arguing. But you can shut that court down because they don't have power, they don't have authority, they don't have jurisdiction, they're not giving you due process, so you can require it to cease and desist through the federal courts to press that out, and you're out of that court. And no court of record is going to take up these cases that they bring against the people. I'm kind of repeat the question again to make sure I answer all of it.
I am arguing before the Third Department that our servants, not the people, must seek and secure from SCOTUS an interpretation other than the plain meaning of the language.
Okay, well, again, getting back, you may be able to respond better to this than me, Gerard. You seem to understand the question better.
Yeah, look, he's saying that if they want to use other than the plain meaning of the language, they got it, that the Supreme Court has to define that. Well, the Supreme Court, look, the plain meaning of the language is written in those maxims of law, which cannot be changed. It makes no difference what the Supreme Court says. So what he's doing is he's actually giving their fiction credibility by saying, well, the Supreme Court will determine if you can put a different meaning than what the plain meaning of the language says. You can't serve two masters. The language says what it says. It doesn't matter what the Supreme Court says, in my opinion, right?
And Jefferson said the same thing that you're saying. You don't have.
What he thinks the Supreme Court's going to do, make wave a magic wand and make the words mean something different than what they mean in plain language? See, they don't write plain language. In other words, when they write laws, they don't write them in plain language because they don't want us to understand them. If they were written in plain language, we would all protest and say, well, that's not what the law says, because it would be very plain to understand it, and it would be based on maxims of law, which are constitutional principles, inalienable rights, which don't mean those come from God. Man has no control over that. You know, so I kind of don't get why he's going to go in and go through all this trouble to say that the government has to go back and get an interpretation of the law that if they want to, he's talking.
I think he's talking about the president, SCOTUS. So he's going back to get the interpretation.
SCOTUS is the Supreme Court.
It's the Supreme Court. Okay, yeah. I'm thinking POTUS. Okay, yeah.
When we looked at the Supreme Court rulings, they don't make any unconstitutional rulings because they're smarter than that. Up at that level, very very rarely did we ever get.
But they definitely jump out of their jurisdiction. They did that with Roe versus Wade, and that's a good example. As a matter of fact, the United States Supreme Court had no power, no authority to take that case on, because that case was a case of law and not equity. Has nothing to do with anything in the Constitution where the authority and the powers to legislate and to judge, that kind of power is not given. That's God's power to make that decision, and that needs to go to a court of law and to the tribunal, the jury. And let me make it a little clearer, too. Look it. They have no elected or paid government official has any power or authority over any of the people to judge them. When you go into a court of law, it is absent of the bureaucrat, with the exception of the administrator of the court. He's a magistrate. A magistrate has no judicial powers or authority, none, with the exception of the execution of that authority. So that magistrate is there to kind of act as a traffic cop, keep things moving along, keep it in order, you know, the guy with the hammer, okay, that's fine. But as far as any of the decisions in that court, it's to be made by the tribunal. It is the tribunal that judges you, an unadulterated tribunal, untainted, okay, the judge doesn't get to tell the jury anything. But the jury needs to understand their full power and authority. They get the power of nullification. And the bottom line is that the jury is the people. They're the ones that we are judged by our peers. We're judged by the people in a court of law under God, not by judges. And that's the difference. And when you get a judge, all judges are magistrates, by the way, and if you get a judge sitting in a court of law, he's got to be quiet and silent to any of the judicial actions he might want to exercise there. He doesn't have the power. He doesn't have the authority. He could be removed for that position if he makes a decision, in a court of law. So that's the difference. And again, the United States Supreme Court is to protect that. That's the only time they have anything to do or say in a court of law, is to protect the rights, the unalienable rights of the people. And that's it. All right.
What would be the best position for a motion to dismiss? What's the strategy for after the judge says, I still have to pay?
He doesn't have jurisdiction is your biggest argument. Move it into, look at, you could move this court on and on and on, and it take a while. You can get a lot of time out of this, and maybe we'll end up in liberty by the time you get to the end of this thing, and you'll have a success. But you could get a success. It's rare if you're really careful and know how to maintain the control of the court. In other words, controlling the narrative. You're on the offense, and they're always on the defense. If you're on the defense, you're losing. If you're not controlling the narrative, you're losing. You got to control it in both ways. But you can have success by challenging the jurisdiction. Okay. Once jurisdiction is challenged, the law says, the United States Supreme Court says, it must be decided. Decided means hearing both sides and making a decision, but in a court of law, a court of record. And so that you can move along. And you'll find, you're not going to find a court of record, most likely. You could get up to the federal level, and the judge may just say to himself, I'm not going to get involved in this. And work. Usually they throw it out. They get a way to make the other side make a deal with you and just leave the court so the judge doesn't even have to make a decision. But in any event,
okay,
we should go back to people. How many more questions do we have?
This is the last one, John.
Yeah.
How do you know what court to file what proceeding in? In other words, if my employer caused me harm, injury, loss, and damage, and that damage is in excess of $1 million, where would I file this claim?
Court of law, only place. It's a state court. But, again, to find one that's really a true court of record, it's hard to find. Well, you're not going to find that. They may apply the proper ruling there, but you're not going to find a court of record. You know, bear in mind, when the federal United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary, created that rules of the court under the Rules Enabling Act, and they put everyone under municipal law. They did that, and the United States was already a municipality, so the law just floated right in. Every other state and county was also in the process of incorporating, becoming municipalities, because there's money in it. It's a money game. It's RICO. The whole thing is just a fix. It's RICO. They're making money off of us. And but in any event, they moved into it. The state started writing all their own laws and municipal laws. The counties wrote them. Even the towns write them. New York City's got a lot of them, you know. And so then they take control, and the people have no clue that that's happening. So read the question to make sure I got that all.
Even the towns write their own laws, and it's called under home rule law. And what it says is that when a town board makes a law, it has the same force and effect as if the state legislator made it.
So we're all under civil law, okay? And civil law is the law of the state, the municipal code. It controls the people. And we shouldn't be. You see, the people... If the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. Not going to happen. Okay,
John,
next.
John?
Yes?
John, this is Terry. Can I just looked up the Enabling Act.
Yes, 1934.
And I would say what?
1934 Enabling Act, yes.
1934, it's on the 73rd Congress, Session 2, page 1064.
Mm-hmm.
And I am surprised. I finally found it and got to read it.
Me too.
And I'm surprised at how strict it is. And right there in it, it says the court, section 2, the court may at any time unite the general rules prescribed by it for cases in equity with those in actions at law,
okay,
so as to secure one form of civil action and procedure for both. Provided, however, that in such union of the rules, the right of trial by jury is as at common law and declared by the 7th Amendment to the Constitution shall be preserved to the parties inviolate. Such united rules shall not take effect until they shall have been reported to Congress by the Attorney General at the beginning of a regular session thereof.
Right, and it's also, and if you go on and read, it refers also to a law that says that anything in the rules that's repugnant to the Constitution, it doesn't say with this language, but it does say this, it's null and void. And again, they've ignored all that. They still did it. But yes, right there, they have moved and got rid of common law. They have combined common law and equity together as one, called the civil action or civil law. We're all under civil law, according to them. They did it by rule, and the people don't even know it. And you know what? This is how bad it is, and how uneducated or de-educated, whatever word you want to use, lawyers, most lawyers are. Because how come they don't know about it? Don't they read the rules? What's wrong with these people? Apparently not. And as a matter of fact, I read papers by these guys, these lawyers that write papers, and it's like reading from the same grade school individual over and over and over. Everything is the same. There's no thinking going on here, okay? No thinking at all. Their paper is really, it's a horrific. It's really bad.
Can I just read that first section of the act?
Sure.
I think that's what you want, and I'd like to do that. Yeah. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, that the Supreme Court of the United States shall have the power to prescribe by general rules for the district courts of the United States and for the courts of the District of Columbia the forms of process, writs, pleadings, and motions, and the practice and procedure in civil actions at law. Said rules shall neither abridge, enlarge, nor modify the substantive rights of any litigant. And then this is the one that kills me. They shall take effect 6 months after their promulgation, and thereafter all laws in conflict therewith shall be of no further force or effect. Did they just nullify the Constitution?
That's right, they did. And the original, you know, you're getting a lot of other add-ons and different things within the concerning the Act. But the Act itself, okay, is six short paragraphs. But among that Act is subsection. This is where Congress tried to protect themselves, but the rest of the language, they destroyed it anyway. It's in subsection 2072B, which is part of the Rules Enabling Act. It says, such rules shall not abridge, enlarge, and you read part of this, modify any substantive right. All laws in conflict with such rules shall be of no further force or effect after such rules have taken effect. And as a matter of fact, I'm using this very clause in all of my paperwork now to make the point concerning the Rules Enabling Act and Rule 2 that it doesn't apply. And the fact that none of these rules apply to we the people. It applies to them, and we will apply it to them. We'll apply the codes to them, the regulations, the statutes to them, and we'll apply the acts to them, because they are under that control. They're under statutory control. We the people are under only God himself. We're under the law and not statutes. But all right, is that it, Terry?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take our caller. You want to take the board, Gerard?
Yeah, it looks like Dan is up next.
Yeah, just careful not to click the wrong button there, okay?
Okay. Okay, Dan, you've been very patient.
You know what, Gerard, just so you know, instead of clicking the next button, it's always best just to click that little phone in front of their name or number, because then you're getting the one that came in order. You know, so I don't know, for some reason it jumps around if you click the next button.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And then that way you won't accidentally click the clear button.
Right.
Or the end session button, which is worse.
That just means an early night, that's all.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, Dan, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, I can. And it might be beneficial, the gentleman that was just reading about the Enabling Act 1934, Mr. John Durash was expounding on it, exactly if he has a website that would be beneficial to others here where he found that information.
Well, that was Terry, and I don't know, where did you find Terry? Where did you look that up? I mean, I know you can get it online. John has found it.
I did a simple DuckDuckGo search and plopped right into it. And it's the Enabling Act statute. And I don't remember.
Look, you could find this and the interpretation of this by the United States Supreme Court themselves on the Federal Judicial Center site. It's fjc.gov, okay? And if you get there and do your search on the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, merge equity and common law, put that in the search tip there, and you will get to a page that says exactly that. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, merged equity and common law, September 16th, 1938. That's when it took effect. The Rules Enabling Act was in 1934, and they finished rule writing, and everything took effect in 1938. But it says in 1938, and this is them, this is the United States Supreme Court, this is the federal judiciary saying this, so listen to what they have to say. And they have no problem with this. We should be going through the roof on this. In 1938, pursuant to its authority under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Among the changes wrought by the rule was the elimination of the federal court's separate jurisdiction over suits in equity, okay, which today is a century-old system in English jurisprudence in which judges base decisions and general principles of fairness in situations where rigid applications of common law would have brought about injustice. Get that. They're telling you common law is going to bring about injustice. So let me go back and I'll skip that insert that they put. Among the changes wrought by the rules was the elimination of the federal court's separate jurisdiction over suits in equity. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits at common law were grouped together under the term civil action. Now, how do you put together oil and water? I mean, you just can't do it. One is statutory, one is God. I mean, how do you do it? You can't do it. One is man, one is God. So they say it right there on their own website. This operates from the Thurgood Marshall Federal Judiciary Building, 1 Columbus Circle, Washington, D.C. Supreme Court of the United States.
I'm sorry, but they also go on and they say it can't enlarge or...
Right, but that's ignored, isn't it?
So what they did was they condemned themselves. First they said, we can do this, but you
can't... Well, remember, Congress wrote that part. Okay, they wrote the rules, but Congress wrote the Rules Enabling Act. The Rules Enabling Act is only six paragraphs, short paragraphs. That was written by Congress, which the Rules Enabling Act enabled the United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary under the control of the minions, which are bar attorneys, to write bar law to control the people. And again, they're minions of the New World Order. They're everywhere you go. There's 80,000 lawyers working in Washington, D.C. as we speak. So you tell me who's running this country, okay? The bar is running it, especially the courts. But in any event, they ignored that when they wrote the rules. They put it in the rules, but they still ignored it.
Well, but you see, that's what they do to keep it constitutional. In other words, they got this group, and they say, well, you have to put this in because if we didn't put that in, it wouldn't be constitutional. But
right.
They just ignore it. Well, that's what Obama did. He just ignored it. I'm going to do it anyway, and nobody knew how to take him to task with it.
See, by nailing to the doors of the court this kind of thing, which is exactly what we're doing, we have 100 pages filed already, more than that, okay? By nailing these truths to their door, you know, it's the blowing of that trumpet to weaken that wall, okay? And when that wall falls and it goes down, then the people will go in and take it, providing they understand how and that they need to do that. Because if the people don't take back the consent of their government, which is done through the judiciary, which is the administrations were setting up for the courts, and the political process, which is the committee man, if you don't take control of that, okay, someone else has to. And who's going to do it? The mob. The mob is going to do it. All of these politicians. You know, I heard Trump... Trump said something funny yesterday or today. I saw it today. I think he said it yesterday. And he talked about something about, you know, thank God we don't... I don't remember what he said exactly, but I interpreted it like this. Thank God we don't have any politicians running our country. You know, the point is that, the politicians is exactly... They're not statesmen, okay? The most qualified person is a person that's not a politician. A person that's a statesman, a constitutionalist, a person that wants to uphold the law. That's what we need in power. And that's the job of the committee man, is to find those people and put them in that place. And when they wander away from that position that they held when you walk the papers to put them on that ballot for them, when they wander away, you recall them. Put another person in place. 90 days, done. Okay.
You ready?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yeah. gentlemen, I have got one little part here in Black's Law Book that I want to interject to our really nice conference here tonight. And it looks like to me it's the auspices or the hypotheses of what would be Mr. John DeRash's mission statement for life to correct these wrongs across this land. And according to Blacks, you guys, I'm going to let you guys just a second here. In Black's Law, oh Lord, I was trying to get better light here and I moved the shade off. Black's Law Book, Dictionary, 6th edition, 1891 to 1991, on page 1545, where it brings a definition in. I hope I'm pronouncing this correct. Sir, you, and I know Brent will correct me if I'm not right on this one. Sir, USURP, starting on the left paragraph and going all the way through, and then it goes various headings. With that word, usurpation.
Can you spell and that?
I'll be glad to. U-S-U-R-P is the first word that struck my attention.
To usurp, yes.
U-S-U-R-P.
Right.
Go to about middle way of the, on page 1545, and right at the center of the page, it has usurpation, U-S-U-R-P-A-T-I-O-N. And then it goes with other definitions, even usurpation of franchise or office. And gentlemen, up on the right-hand top, right column, USURPER, that would be the person involved, one who assumes the right of government by force contrary to and in violation of the Constitution of the country. Is a very short definition. Then the very next one you want to, and this is the last one, usurper of a public office. And that'll be up, right column, up at the top. I find myself dealing with two towns, and these towns.
Let me just read the fourth edition on the word usurp, U-S-U-R-P, and it says to seize and hold any office by force and without right, applied to seizure of office, place, functions, powers, rights, etc. And that's how the United States Supreme Court interpreted that word. Now, you know, again, that's what they've done. They're usurpers. All these judges are usurpers. But go ahead.
And you said it real well, and you guys really need to read usurpation. It says the unlawful encroachment.
Spell that.
Of a pardon?
Spell that. Is that with an E?
U like in universe. And then S U R.
Usurpation. P-A-T-I-O-N?
P-A-T-I-O-N. That's
okay, go ahead. I got it.
That's a definition you guys really want to pay attention to. And then the usurper, the one I was telling you, of a public office. And then back to the where you read about just the very first definition, U-S-U-R-P. But that usurpation quickly, it says the unlawful encroachment of assumption of the use of property, power, or authority which belongs to another. That's us, the sovereigns.
Mm-hmm.
We the people that is being offended and being abused. And then it says, an interruption or the disturbing of a man in his right and his possession. Yes, the second paragraph to that says, the unlawful seizure or assumption of sovereign power. And it spells it out right there about, because you educate us every evening about a sovereign and the rights and the procedures, and you did such a nice job, all you guys, tonight. Then it says assumption of government or supreme power by force or illegally. And then it says, comma, in derogation, D-E-R-O-G-A-T-O-N, of the Constitution and the rights of the lawful ruler.
Exactly.
And,
the fourth says pretty much the same thing, but go ahead.
And one quick final, the usurpation for which writ of prohibition may be granted involves attempted exercise of power not possessed by inferior officer. And you train us every evening about these so-called, you said the judge, he's at best a magistrate, and at best in these color of courts and de facto courtrooms, those people are at best, that call themselves judges, are no more than what is called a hearing officer. And my colleague, Mr. David, he's going to sleep on me again tonight, but he has backed some of these judges right in the corner, and they had to admit that they were not a judge, that they were no more, and these courts, de facto courts, have to understand, and they're no more than hearing officers. They're not even that. They're criminals cloaked in these rooms that's going to have to take a back seat because of the tremendous research and the effort that is not only spearheaded by Mr. John DeRash and the rest of the guys that's behind the scenes and with the whole team of National Liberty Alliance. I'll assure you, this needs to be taught in every classroom, especially these kids who are getting before they head out to college or what have you. Well, that's enough.
Hey, Dan.
Let me just add to that, though. That will happen. Hang on 1 second, Gerard. I'll give you the mic in a second. That will happen, okay, if we, the people, take back the committee man process and the judicial process. It's up to the people to do this, and we can accomplish this, and we can do it, and we can have it done before next year is out. Go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dan, when you were reading that, Dan, when you were talking about the usurper, and then it said, what was the procedure? It said was the remedy that you filed to protest that?
Well, I didn't per se as much as the gentleman.
There was a sentence in there that said, then you need to, I forget the wording that you used, when that happens, when the unlawful entity is usurping your rights, then you need to there was a word there they used.
You talking about the writ of prohibition?
Maybe.
It says, now that's in the definition under usurpation, and I'll read it again. It says, usurpation for which writ of prohibition may be granted involves attempted exercise of power not possessed by inferior officer. I guess that would be a writ of prohibition is the best I can get,
right,
Mr. Brent.
See, listen, they're going after people in rem, taking property away, you know, taking children away even, and that's probably the procedure that's necessary to challenge it would be a writ of prohibition because they're acting outside of their authority. It says it right there. I mean, I think that's a good quote to put in the case and to use that.
Absolutely. And let me say this, what Mr. John has been teaching us, he mentioned a while ago, and every time he says something, it stirs my mind in the right direction and steers it too. That's a good word. And he mentioned a while ago about contradiction. Gentlemen, you cannot have a contradiction in any contract, which is the strongest thing on this planet, between two or more consenting parties, that it makes it binding if they're mutually in consent and assent to it. Don't try to disturb it once it's perfected. You cannot have a contradiction in law. You know what a definition of totality is?
Go ahead.
Every lawsuit and every affidavit should be nothing but a totality. That's a statement. any way you want to fix it inside, it's always true. It will never be anything but true. And contradiction is right in reverse. It's a statement that will always be false, and it'll remain false. And so in a court of law, whereas Mr. John teaches us to go and file in federal court because of this lower inferior court, he's challenging their jurisdiction. And so that's the easiest way to do it, to get into federal court. And it's the proper way, really, because he's telling the truth to that lower court. They have no jurisdiction or no standing. And so I believe you could also use, guys, at some point that they're in the laws you were talking about a while ago. This young man was quoting us and general procedure and court section 2 and so forth. Oh, excuse me, the Enabling Act of 1934, and then Mr. John was talking about the general procedures 1938, and then you guys came to a meeting of the minds that all they did was totally void the Constitution at some point. And so when those things happen, truly no one on this land is wanting to go in a courtroom where the Constitution has been completely removed from the procedures, because that court would not be the highest court in the land, and you would not have no respect for it, nor would it have any jurisdiction, or would it have any authority.
And that was the proper case to bring up in the trials of the Bundys over there, when the judge repeatedly said there's no constitution in this courtroom. They should have said, well, then I'm in the wrong jurisdiction here, and you don't have jurisdiction, right? That was the thing to challenge right then and there.
And boy, did you come at the proper punchline, because our president absolutely interceded with his officials, and they saw the wrong that was happening to the Bundys. Man, there was one person lost his life over there, guys, in pure nonsense. And we could go some further situations in Waco, Texas. An attorney, I'm not going to call this person who really done those people in at Waco, but I'm going to tell you something. When Mr. John told us earlier this evening that a lot of these people, some of which have stopped him, are seemingly morons, would be putting it lightly, and abuse their power to a point of taking somebody else's life, whether it be in violation of search, the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure, or stopping someone on highways or whatever, and the next thing they've shot somebody right down a cold. These people could literally, with all the forces they have, with stun guns and everything, they don't have to take a person's life. When they're just one person out in the car out there, and if they're trained properly to start with, well, they just don't have to do it anywhere. To take another person's life, to see that happen, is somebody is committing tremendous travesties of violations of various laws. It's one, our Heavenly Father plainly tells us, "Thou shalt not kill." Now, that officer was defending himself. I'll close right here. I want you to comment. If that officer was defending himself and he was under threat, you know, in the heat of a passion of an argument or something, we'd understand possibly a little better. But there's too much of this stuff going on, and it's causing civil unrest with, and I think you know, Ferguson and all these other places and Philadelphia and everything. We've seen this stuff, and this is just not right. We're supposed to be our brother's keeper. That's enough for me to say right now. Go ahead, whoever.
I was just going to say, look, they intended to kill those people, all of them, not just Lavoie. The whole roadblock was set up as a dead man's road block. They purposely put it without enough sight distance for him to be able to stop. And then they shot at them, and they were shooting into the truck as he was coming up to the roadblock. And we looked at all the evidence because they had camera footage, and you could see each time that a shot went off, his foot came off the brake, and the truck sped up a little bit, you know, for each shot. That was a murder scene, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, and all the evidence proves that. So that's still got to be fleshed out because they haven't paid for that. You know, that's who's ever in charge of that. Everybody, all the way up to the governor there, should be part of that murder because they were
and they are. Those officials don't know it, but if it's their state and whatever, they are to some degree and can be brought in a court of law. Whether they did the act, they have those people working in these various capacities, and they can be brought in a courtroom as well.
Well,
I know it don't sound
because they gave the order. The official, the governor,
mm-hmm.
he gave the order to assassinate.
Absolutely. We could really talk a lot about this, and we probably got some other people, and I have to be mindful of this all the time. Guys, let me tell you real quickly, I'm sure that Jan will be able to fill you in, Mr. John, and you too, Mr. Brent, and any others that need to be. I will tell you this. Just recently, after speaking on October the 7th in a town, and I had the situation aware that the mayor instructed the town administrator to meet with me at the very close next moment on his calendar, and which was a matter of a few days, I think, into the next week. Nevertheless, as it turned out, I had three different issues and a couple issues that I spoke with them, and the federal government's involved and has to do with the dredging. I won't go all into that, but I did make some calls to Washington, D.C., but there is this other part that's been ongoing for maybe as far back as 2008. Literally, there's different emails coming to town administrators for this particular issues where they are in violation of the laws laid down by the legislators, North Carolina. I've researched this to the Hilton. And so we had a meeting just recently. In closing, it turned out that I had to serve not only the manager of that town, but also simultaneously the policeman that was head of new police chief. And so we've got an ongoing situation right there of notices being placed on an 830-acre tract of land. Jan knows a tremendous lot of this. So I hope you guys got the PDF format that was recently put together. Now, this more so concerned Mr. Brent, the Russ gentleman that you spoke with in a couple of Monday nights.
Well, hold on, Dan, let me make one correction before you continue.
Sure,
that's
sure,
not Brent. Absolutely. You're talking to Gerard. That was Gerard. Maybe he sounds like Brent. I didn't notice that he didn't. I don't know. But go ahead.
We were talking to Durant and not Brent.
Of course, you're talking to Gerard, right?
Gerard, right. This
Gerard tonight. Oh, Brent's not on the phone.
Yeah, Brent's not on the call tonight, no.
Brent's here.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry, Gerard.
That's okay.
I am embarrassed almost. Your voice is hard for me to hear, and I really thought Brent was on this phone tonight. But I wished he was, but I'm certainly really appreciate the comments that you made. Really tremendous. But I didn't realize that he was. Thank you for stepping in there, Mr. John. Okay, I know Jan's getting sitting over about to fall out in his chair over this.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Real interesting, so we'll move ahead to the next caller, who's James
Barr. Attorney General's up next.
Attorney General James Barr. You know, before James gets on, I just want to say, you know, the schools aren't teaching much, but one idea that comes out loud and clear that everybody seems to have been taught is that this idea of precedence, and when they do something for 50 years, even though it's illegal, it becomes the law. That's what the average person thinks, and the high school students, and even grown people, they think just because something's been done for 50 years, now you can't change it. It's the law. I mean, that's a lie from hell. But anyway.
Yeah, well, Congress and the United States Supreme Court seems to think that, too.
Yeah, so we've done it so long, we can't change it now. No, the reason they can't change it because they've done it so long is they'd have to go back and pay all those people that they hurt and usurped and everything else they did because they'd have to admit they were wrong, and that's why they won't go back. Anyway, go ahead, Mr. James Barr, if you're there. Did we put you to sleep? Unmute yourself. Or you are unmuted according to this. Unless you have your own mute button on your computer.
Okay, this is Jim in Pennsylvania.
There you go.
Okay, hey, Gerard, I just want to let you know you've been fading in and out all night long on my landline.
Oh, well, I think it's time for a new headset. Kerry complained
that. Well, I don't know. Was I fading in and out? Any other callers also, or just Gerard?
I'll tell you what, you've been booming me all night, John.
Yeah, I just got to lower my
mic
again.
I can't turn my mic up anymore. It lets me go to 70%, and that's all.
No, you've been sounding good to me. I'm just wondering if that's on his side. So, but go ahead, Jim.
They probably don't want me to talk, so they probably hit that button to shut Gerard up because they don't. I'm too radical. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, my question is I'm kind of technology challenged. I want to be able to download the audio, the Monday night conference call, onto a CD. Is there some simple way to do that?
Yeah, you just got to download it, and once you download it, you just drag it and drop it onto a CD.
Yeah, you got a CD burner in your computer, right?
Yeah, like I said, I'm really challenged on that, but okay.
Most computers now will burn CDs and DVDs. But
everything, yeah.
Yeah, and so like John said, if you download it into a file, then you drag that file, you put the writable CD in the bin, and then you just drag it and drop it there. It should record it.
Yeah, and if you want to download it, all you have to do is right-click the MP3 that you want to download, just right-click it, and then click Save Link As, and then you give it a name and put it where you want it in whatever folder, and you execute it, and there it is. It'll take a couple of seconds to download. They do download pretty quick, so it might take, 30 seconds or so.
Okay. Well, listen, I just wanted to mention, you were talking about the rules of participating in a municipal primary. I don't know if you recall that part.
There's the election law for participating in the only person elected in the primary is the committee man.
Okay.
And so the election law.
My thought about that is I'm a third party. I'm not permitted to participate in the municipal primary.
Well, you're absolutely right, because the other parties, other than the two parties, they don't have really any power at all. They very rarely get anyone elected. I mean, it would usually be local elections if you get someone elected, but you're not going to get people elected generally, usually not anyway, in Congress or places like that. Of course, that's a little unfair. You know, you go down to the Board of Election, the left side is where the Democrats are, and you got people that are Democrats that run the Board of Election on their side, and on the right side, you got the Republicans, and all of those people are Republicans, and they do business from that side. And I forget where it was. I think it's in Albany. They actually have, it looks like there's a divider. When you stand at the counter and you look over, there's a divider between the two sides, and it's very strange. But in
if you're an independent, you can still walk petitions in your room.
Oh yes, but there's no power in taking it back.
Yeah, nobody. Look, you're gonna get elected because nobody's gonna be running against you in the first place, right? In other words, you go get 5% of the registered independent voters in your voting district to sign your thing, and you're gonna be deemed an independent committee man at that point.
Yeah, but it doesn't have any power. You know, look, it makes sense. Look, they've all been corrupted, even in the independents. It doesn't matter. They're all corrupt, and Republicans, all of them. But look, at anybody that's anything but, or they don't have a registered party, you should become one or the other, Democrat or Republican, and then run for committeeman, because you won't be able to run for committeeman to give any power or authority if you're an independent. It just doesn't work. You can't do it. But you know, you can hold your nose and pick a party, Democratic or Republican. We need people in the Democratic Party that have common sense, and we can bring back the law, because look at, we need to be constitutionalist. We need to get rid of the party agendas, and which is association agendas, which is really, you know, Dominion's agendas. But we need to get rid of that and let the people get in there. We be the people. Let's be the people. Hey, let's do the people business.
What party was Ross Perot when he was the third party for the presidency? Was he in?
I think he was conservative, wasn't he? I don't know.
Patriot, you
know,
Party.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know
what
he
was.
Was
it? Say that again. Patriot.
I don't know. Okay.
Patriot Party. So he opened his own party, which you can do when you're running for president or governor. If you get so many votes, it becomes a valid party after it. But you see, they only let him in because they needed a spoiler. They needed that third party to get their man in, and they knew it. So they allowed Ross Perot to come in under a third party because that year it worked better for them. You know what I'm saying?
He should have known better.
Yeah, they used him. He was just something that. To dilute the vote so that they could get their man in. Of course, today they don't care about that. They just program. They use George Soros' program to two for me and one for you on the votes. That's all. That and they bus in illegal aliens and stuff to pull levers. So that's the new strategy now. But anyway.
Okay. One last
it?
Thing, yep. John. I'm just concerned that I'd be playing in their sandbox if I went to the Republican or Democrat parties.
No, you'd be no.
No, but we're taking it back. You're not going to be an association. We're going to be the elected committeemen. We're going to take it away from them and bring it back to the people. Listen, maybe you missed this part, or maybe I failed to say this. Once the elected committeemen take control of, let's just say one party, Republican Party, the committeemen get elected, even if it's only five of them, and they take control of the Republican Party, all the offices in the entire state that hold the name Republican, where they have telephones, they're answering, they got secretaries, they got all kinds of things going on, they're doing business, they're doing political things. Well, they got to go find another name now, because that name belongs to the people, and that's in the election law. Okay, this belongs to the people. This is a party. You can't call yourself a Republican Party, part of the Republican Party, and be part of an association. Therein is the George Washington Clause to prevent that from happening. They took that out in 1909, at least here in New York they did. So last time it was there, 1911, didn't show up no more. So
okay.
Let's take it back. Look at the name Republican or Democratic really comes, and it didn't come from Jefferson, but it's the people who supported Jefferson's, and he had a Republican position, which of course is constitutional, but he didn't necessarily call himself a Republican, but there was a key, the people who were supporting him coined the name the Democratic Republican Party. Okay, now I don't know that they used the word party, because the Democrat Party didn't find itself till a lot later, in the very early 1800s. And the same thing that the Republican Party didn't start until Lincoln. So what happened was they divided Jefferson. They really took that name and divided Jefferson. They both tried to claim Jefferson, okay, both parties. And but Jefferson, his main position was the destruction of this country would come from the judiciary. Okay, George Washington took the other side of the coin, because they both did the same job, but he took the other side of the coin. He said no. He didn't say no to Jeff. What Jefferson said, he just said something different. That he saw that this country is going to be destroyed by parties. Okay, that they're going to become private associations, and they're going to put the will of the party above the will of the people, and that's exactly what they've done. It's nothing but chaos. Just look what's going on in Congress right now. It's falling apart. It's chaos. We need to bring this back. We really need to recapture this. And I'm telling you, if we recapture it and we hold to ourselves a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, doing the good work, okay, for ourselves, our sakes, and our children's sake, for our posterity, if we do this and take it back, we can get rid of the politics and all the BS. We can bring Congress back under control. We can get rid of all of these tyrants that hold the hammer there in Congress, and just do nothing but destruction.
It's all part of the bread.
John, John, you said something. I don't want I don't stay on very long, but how about if I just went up, did not register to vote, and went up to vote as one of the people? And then do a provisional ballot if I'm not a
voter. You could do whatever you want. You don't even have to, as long as you register to vote, you don't even have to have a party. You don't have to choose a party.
You can register as no party.
But the point that we're trying to say is there's no power in it. If you want to run for committeeman to help take back the political process and get rid of all these evil people and stop all this funny money and stop the politicking and get back to the Congress, because the Constitution, which that's what we the committeemen can apply and force. We can enforce that. That's the point. Don't get lost in the idea of these people, these corrupt people that took back the parties, that you're becoming a Democrat or you're becoming a Republican and you got some a certain philosophical thinking and you got to stick with them. No, we're trying to destroy. We're trying to get rid of that. That's destructive. We're trying to get rid of that. We want to bring it back to the people. As a matter of fact, really, in the end day, and we spoke about this at the convention when we came together in New York on the Republican Party, the elected Republicans, committeemen. One of the things was eventually at some point in time, we take this back this way, we'll fuse the parties back together and get rid of parties altogether, and it'll just be the committeemen. We don't need this. When George Washington was elected, when Jefferson was elected, when Adams was elected and Jefferson was elected, there were no parties then. Yeah, there were people that gathered together with a certain opinion and a thought and an idea, and these people there, and so, but there were no parties. They didn't have the Republican or the Democratic Party. The big thing, the big argument back in that day was the Federalist against the Anti-Federalist. That was the big argument. And the Federalist, Jefferson said, I'm a Federalist myself, but I can't hold the name because they're making it something that it's not. Okay? And Madison kept that straight on both sides of the coin, as a matter of fact, James Madison. But the real part of that whole thing was the Federalists, generally, most of them, not all of them, wanted the federal government to be more powerful, where the Anti-Federalist says, no, we want a weak federal government. We want the sovereign states. Okay, and they succeeded in that creation. Our Constitution represents exactly that: sovereign people and sovereign states under the law, by way of a covenant with God through the Declaration of Independence. That's what we are. That's what is written down. That's what we were created to be. And so we need to take it back. It's still there. It's still on the paper. It's still, you can read the actual paper of the Constitution, which is probably, I don't know if it's actually one of the originals, but in any event, it's still all there. So let's take it back. We could take back the law. I'm telling you, once they lose their war, once they lose their protection, they're going to fall apart.
I'd love to go into the Democratic Party, like as a double agent. I would run.
Well, I'm in the Republican Party as a double agent.
I probably break out in a rash, but like Jefferson said, I can't call myself a Federalist. I can't take the name. But it's just perception. You know, I wouldn't want to be called a Democrat because I wouldn't want to walk. At some point, you're going to be afraid to walk down the street because I think they're getting that ridiculous that people are going to be that much against that party. They've ruined themselves, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the socialists have taken it over.
I think everybody's going to hold them responsible, especially if the economy goes down. I mean, I'd be afraid to call myself a Democrat at some point. You know what I mean? But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, well, look, they've become the Socialist Party. You better take your next caller, or we finish up with this caller.
Yeah, let's finish up with Jim.
Yeah, good night. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
That was quick.
Yeah. Should we do one more? We leave it a lot of people hanging.
Oh, my goodness. It's that late. I didn't even realize.
Yeah, it's very
time
late.
Flies when you're having fun. Oh, my. We got a whole bunch of people in the queue. Well, if you want to stick around, I got to get to sleep. Let's take one more.
Yeah, okay. So let me just unmute Barbara. Go ahead, Barbara, from New York. Hi. She's from my state.
Okay.
I got to unmute her.
Okay. Thanks, Barbara from New York. I wanted to ask on the committeemen, what positions do you, you know, foster that you interview for? Is it, does it go down to the, like, the local? Which positions are...
Well, let me explain how that works, okay? Look, each election district has one committeeman, okay, in each party, all right? And, for example, my county, where I live, Dutchess County, New York, we have 249 election districts. So, therefore, we have 249 committeemen. Now, each one of these committeemen, each one of these election districts, you know, falls into certain political subdivisions. For instance, there's the subdivision of assemblymen. So, if you're going to vote for an assemblyman, which is your state congress, on the assembly side, then there's the state, also the state representative. Now the state, not the state, I'm sorry, the Senate, okay? Now the Senate should be elected by the county, and they've screwed this up and they gerrymandered all this. We got to try to fix this back up again. But in any event, you got an assembly district, and in that assembly district, that assemblyman represents the people in a certain district, an assembly district. There's 150 of them here in New York State, for instance. Okay, so all of the election districts that fall inside that assembly district, when that office is up to go to become brought, you know, to be elected, then the people, the committeemen will elect, will congregate in the assembly district. And they will get together, and they will interview people who are running for the assembly, and then decide who they're going to support. They're going to want to support more than one, usually, so the people have a choice. Look, if three or four or five good people come up, why not support them all? Throw them into the primary and let the people decide. And Let me explain it. Now you're in an election district. Now you have the senatorial. Okay. Subdivision, which should be the county, by the way. Okay, so now all the people of there are 62 senators, New York senators in New York, in the New York legislature. So all of the people will come together in the county in one place, and they will interview people running for New York Senate or whatever your state is Senate. And again, you find two, three, four good people, you work their papers, get them on the ballot, and then you move on. Same thing with your town, the election of the people in your town, the people in the town, all the committeemen within the town, within all those election districts come together. So you see, the committeemen sit on different places. Now, they have what's called the executive. The executive committee, okay, is chosen, usually it should be chairman, from each of the state to go together and represent a whole county, for instance. That's the way it should be. So there should be 62 executive people on the executive committee. And they should be going back to the people in their county and trying to discover what's the will of the county or the committeemen to see who's going to run, because they're going to make a decision usually for governor or for president, okay, you know, on those levels, okay? And they should, like, so the counties should get together. And Dutchess County, 249 people should get together, and they should decide on whether there's two or three guys running for a particular position. So they would send someone up on the state level to interview them, one person from every county, 62. And then they'd come back, and they'd work that out with the people, and they make a vote. And then they put the person onto the ballot by walking their papers. That's the way it should be. Right now, the way it works is you've got five people. And they're called the committee chair, the executive chair. And there are five people that sit on that chair, and they control everything. Everything. They don't even ask the committeemen. They make the decision. They make the committeemen think that they voted it in, but they pre-decide everyone going on the ballot. That's the problem. We need to take over that committee, control the whole state, and then when the next election comes up, disperse that committee, totally annihilate it, make it disappear forever.
So we would be going from five committeemen for the state of, for Dutchess County.
Well, it would be ideal to get five people per county, But if we can't do that, we can win it with five people in the state, because the elected committeemen can fill the seats by appointment until the next election.
Okay. All right.
So we can take the people that think they're committeemen and think their vote is counting, and we can train them better, teach them the Constitution, appoint them and use them, and then teach them how to become elected committeemen the next time around. You see? So we could fill the whole state up very quickly if we can get five people in every state run for committeemen.
Yeah, you're not going to want to fire those people because they're already interested. They're already out.
Yes. Yeah, use the people. Just give them the truth and train them. They'll do the right thing. They're the people.
Okay.
It's the party bosses in there for the money that's going to cause the problem.
Hey, John, do you still have that Jim Condit video that explains the committee man?
You know, I'm sure I do. I got to go looking for it.
I think that's a good one for somebody that's never been exposed to that, because that's very simply put, you know, really explains what a voting district and a precinct is and a committee man.
Yeah.
I thought it was very well done. I thought maybe you could throw it back up.
Yeah, I'm sure I can find it. I know I got it. We'll put it up.
Yeah.
Okay, Barbara, you got a final word before we shut you down?
That's good. Very well organized. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Barbara. All right, it's time to go to sleep, really. I got work in the morning and the business of NLA. So. Okay, we're done, right?
I'm done.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everyone. We had a lot of people who wanted to be active. I wish we could have worked a little faster, but we had some good callers, too. So
I think we should concentrate more on the people in the queue. And, like, I know people write the stuff in, but we can take the ones that were written in, and we can do them the following week.
Yeah, when we have too many, we should only do one or two,
right.
Especially if we have a lot of people in the queue, like you say.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
A lot of time, and we could take them other questions, and we could use them as fillers when we have nobody.
There you go. You're hearing all this, Jan. It's all your fault.
Of course, we don't hardly ever have nobody, but it happens sometimes. We do it at the beginning. Well, nobody's in there. We'll take this question. All right.
Uh-oh, Jan's heading for he's heading for the mic. Watch out.
Yeah, I just heard his feet running out the door.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming, and sorry we couldn't get everybody in the queue. Lord will. And by the way, look at next week. Get into the queue quick, early on, so you'd be one of the first. Lord willing, we'll see you next week. Thanks for coming. And let's become committeemen, committeemen, committeemen. And if you want a good job, become an administrator. It's a paid position. We're going to be talking more about that, too, as time goes on. All right. Meanwhile, I'm looking for the shutdown button. Oh, there it goes. Stop meeting. There it is. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, and